Good evening. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the March 6, 2018 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Would you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? Roll call of members, please.
Mr. John? Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Mr. Klein?
As is Mr. John.
Here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Corbin?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey has asked to be excused this evening. Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Ms. Black?
Here.
Ms. Champion?
Here.
Ms. Dawson?
I'm here.
Mr. Granison?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
13 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
Thank you. We have a couple of special things today. And first, let me ask everybody to silence any devices you have. I got to keep remembering to say that. Put them in your pocket. Thank you. First, I would like to invite Heather Hughes from RACR, also known as the RACR. Francisco RACR Center. We're supposed to just call it RACR now, correct? That's right. Heather is Director of Community Relations and Development. We have a proclamation tonight. Whereas Francisco RACR Center, through its diversity of programs and services, contributes to the cultivation of a world where all people know they belong. And whereas on March 1, 1948, the State of New York awarded a certificate of incorporation to the Cerebral Palsy Association of Ithaca Area Incorporated to ensure support, raise awareness of, and provide services to individuals with disabilities. And whereas the spirit and pioneering leadership of longtime medical director, Dr. Francisco RACR, inspired a 1999 renaming of the organization to Francisco RACR Centers. And whereas the Tompkins County Legislature shares Dr. RACR's continued vision of inclusion, diversity, and community connections for all members of society. And whereas RACR continues to serve thousands of individuals and families through its early childhood community support, residential and clinical services, and specialized learning initiatives, now, therefore, I, Martha Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, in recognition of 70 years of the RACR way, do hereby proclaim March 2018 as RACR Month in Tompkins County and encourage the celebration of this incredible anniversary. And I just want to say that that Heather, I had the privilege about 20 years ago of being in the exact department that you're chair of in community relations at the RACR Center, and we celebrated the 50th anniversary when I was there. So congratulations.
Thank you, everyone. So in March 1948, we were an organization that was started by families coming together who wanted to keep their children home and were privileged to serve Central New York still today, 70 years later, and support families throughout this region. We support more than 3,000 families on an annual basis and have grown into an organization that employs more than 900 people across three counties. So thank you very much for recognizing the work that we're privileged to do in this community.
Thank you very much, Heather. We'll get to public privilege in a moment. If you have, if you want to address the legislature, the blue sheets are on the back table there. You can fill those out and pass them up. But first, I'd like to invite legislators Leslie McBean Claiborne, Shauna Black, and Henry Granison to the podium to make a special award.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
And then there was silence.
Good evening, everyone. Many years ago, one of our colleagues, I think it was Frank Proto and others, brought to this legislature a proposal to recognize young people in our community who have been doing great work, who have been showing bravery, who have been excelling in so many things. We call it the Distinguished Youth Award. This award is given by the legislature in collaboration with a number of other community agencies and organizations, and it is normally given on the second meeting of our meeting of our monthly legislature meeting. We have two meetings. So it is our honor and privilege this at this meeting. I know it's the first meeting in March. We didn't get it together for the second meeting in February, which is when we wanted to do this. We want to take this opportunity to recognize the students of Students United here in Ithaca for their bravery, for standing up for what they believe in equality and justice and inclusion. So I just wanted to give an introduction about that award and invite my colleague, Henry Granison, to read the nomination.
Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. Words of Dr. Martin Luther King. Students United Ithaca is a group of student activists founded by five Ithaca high school students ranging from ages 14 through 18 who saw injustice in our school system. Instead of running from those injustices, they had the courage to face them head on and demanded to be heard. These students alleged that Ithaca City School District Performing Arts had a history of nurturing and favoring white students, tokenizing a small group of students of color, telling white-centered narratives, and casting people of color in stereotypical roles. By pointing out these issues, these students have faced many negative reactions from their school and local communities. Moreover, when Fox News, Breitbart News, and the Daily Stormer picked up the story, many trolls came out to harass, threaten, and intimidate these students and their families. When confronted with such darkness and hatred, these students and their families did not run and hide, nor did they lash back at the trolls. They doubled down by asking the community for support to their efforts even more. They sought light and love to combat the darkness and hatred. For their courage to start and to continue their efforts in face of such hatred, this is why we are honoring them, the students tonight, with the Distinguished Youth Award.
Like to invite each one of the students up to receive the Distinguished 2018 Youth Award with their name. The plaques, as well as some of the gifts, were brought to us by Bangs Ambulance, the Tompkins County Legislature, Specialty Trophy and Awards of Dryden, Purity Ice Cream, and Cayuga Radio Group. So I would like to have Ari Cummings.
I'd like to have Maddie Carroll.
Prachi Ruina, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes.
Annabelle Mead Van Court.
And last but certainly not least, Amen Nun Makepeace. This is one of my favorites. Sorry, y'all. And caregivers and friends, you don't have to stay that far. You can come up. I actually do want to invite caregivers, parents who are in the room of these children to please come stand with them, because you have been just as powerful in your stance. And so we need you to come join them. Those of you who are taking pictures, come closer and take pictures. Anyone who would like to say a few words in response?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, then we'll step aside.
Hi, I'm Maddie Carroll, and I just wanted to say thank you so much, you know, for this award. It means so much to us. You know, having support from lots of people makes us feel like we can take on the world, and it's given us so much courage and made us so happy. So thank you for your love and for acknowledging the work that we've been doing.
Hi, thank you so much. Students United Ithaca was formed to spread awareness of racial issues that are alive in our society today. I think a lot of people have tried to tell these issues, but have gotten muffled by the world. And I'm so honored that our message got out and that we're making a change. Thank you so much.
Hi. thank you so much for this award and for supporting us, and it really means a lot to all of us.
I just want to say thank you so much. The community support on this has been just overwhelming, and we can't tell you how much your support means to us. Thank you.
Again, like everybody else said, thank you so much for the community support. It's amazing to have everybody here with us. I just can't. It's great. It's great. Thank you so much.
He's done. Thank you all so very much. We are honored, and please don't leave just yet. I know you have to go on to something. Give us just a couple more minutes. We really do appreciate your stance and all of you. Thank you.
And your parents.
And your parents.
Okay.
All right. Thank you all so very much. We're honored by your presence. We're honored by your actions and your voices. And some of us who remember when we were your ages, we hope, you know, it would be nice to think that we had been as courageous, or that our children are as well. So thank you so very much for all that you do. And keep it up. And I would like to turn to Leslyn for a special resolution that we would like to add to the agenda. It's in your red folders, folks. So first we have to vote to add it. So if you want to read the title.
Sure. Thank you. Resolution supporting inclusion and rejecting hateful threats made against Tompkins County residents. And I move it for addition to the agenda.
And that is seconded by Mike Lane. So we just need to vote to add it to the agenda, and then we can discuss and vote on it. All in favor of adding to the...
Oh, Madam Chair, is this number E, the one that's in our...
It's in your packet. It's in your red folder, I mean.
Oh. I understand that. It just has E on it.
L. That's an L, and I can't find my copy of it. should be L in your red folder. And it says, at the top, it says added by.
Oh, I understand that. Okay.
Where'd it go?
Mine says E. But,
ID 7669.
Got it. Okay. All in favor of adding this to the agenda, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That is now added. So, Lezen, would you like to move the resolution?
Yes, Madam Chair. Please indulge me because I'd like to read this resolution. Resolution supporting inclusion and rejecting hateful threats made against Tompkins County residents. Whereas the Tompkins County Legislature believes that cultivating an inclusive culture enhances individual potential and encourages a variety of perspectives that ultimately drives creativity and innovation. And whereas the leaders of Students United of Ithaca High School shared a similar value and engaged in activism around the issues of inclusion and systemic bias. And whereas the student leaders and their families have been targeted for threats, verbally and otherwise, that are steeped in racism, bigotry, and xenophobia. And whereas, despite continuing efforts by many people and organizations nationally and internationally, racial discrimination and violence persist throughout the world. And whereas, racially motivated hate crimes and inequality of treatment and opportunities have no place in society, should not become normalized, and should be rejected outright. And whereas hate crimes in the United States remain at a steady level, the FBI's Uniform Crime Reporting UCR program released hate crime statistics 2016 reported that of the 6,121 criminal incidents, 6,063 were single bias incidents. Of the single bias incidents, 57.5% were motivated by race, ethnicity, or ancestry bias. 21% were motivated by a religious bias. 17% were motivated by a sexual orientation bias. The remaining incidents were motivated by a gender identity, disability, or gender bias. And whereas the Tompkins County Legislature states that all acts of hatred, bigotry, and violence spread fear and run counter to the principles that we have always adhered to in Tompkins County, now therefore be it resolved that the Tompkins County Legislature applauds the leaders of Ithaca Students United for standing on principle and raising awareness to the issue of equity and inclusion, thus educating and reminding school and community leaders of the existing problem. Resolved further that the Tompkins County Legislature recognizes the Ithaca City School District for its decision to support a new production that will give the students of Ithaca High School an opportunity to demonstrate excellence in the dramatic arts, and in particular, in Selection of Hairspray, a play that confronts issues of racism and inclusion in our society. Resolved further, the Tompkins County Legislature denounces the hate language and horrifying atrocities that the student leaders and families of Student United have been subjected to. Resolved further that the Tompkins County Legislature wishes to send a clear message to those perpetrators of the hateful, threatening messages that their actions will not be tolerated or accepted in this county, and that we will employ any and all resources available to us within the extent of the law to repel such behaviors and protect the fine citizens of Tompkins County from any form of unspeakable hatred.
I wonder if I can call for a unanimous second of that resolution.
Yes,
will everybody join me in seconding?
Second.
Very well. Is there any discussion? Thank you, Leslie. Leslin.
Madam Chair, I want to acknowledge all of my colleagues, and I want everyone sitting here to know that although I took a stab at this resolution, all of my colleagues had input in making it what it finally turned out to be, and we truly stand by what we mean as a legislature. So I just wanted to share and say thank you to my colleagues for your input.
Thank you, Leslin. Ann Corman.
Thank you, Martha. Thank you, Leslin, for bringing forth this resolution. And I wanted to say to the Students United that I stand with you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Mike.
Mine's a point of order question, actually. It's my understanding we're not going to have the public speak before we vote on this. Is that not the case, or is that the case?
That's correct. They're going to have them turn them
I think in. You're going to need a motion for that. And just listen to me out. It'll be quick. A person is not member. I think we should let the people speak before we actually go in the legislation, as opposed to after. But I also understand that people have to leave and they want to see this passed. So I guess you could make a motion to suspend this rule, but our rule is privilege of the floor. Persons not members of the legislature shall, upon consent of the chair or upon the request of any member of the legislature, be accorded the privilege of the floor and be permitted to speak in regards to matter pending before the legislature. So pending is kind of the key word there. It's got to be before. You can't pass legislation and then say, oh, now we can speak on it, basically. So that's really up to the chairwoman.
Dan.
Motion to suspend the rules.
Is there a second to that? Second by Deborah. Jonathan, is there any debate on that? Or we vote?
Is there?
Some of these motions you can't debate, but I just wanted to check before I ask for debate.
I know of no rule which says you can't have debate on a motion to suspend.
Okay. All right. Is there any discussion? All right. So, Dan, your motion is with the intention that we go ahead and vote on this.
Correct. Yep.
And I would just like to explain that I had a feeling we would have a lot of speakers on public privilege tonight. There are a lot of issues that are, live wires in the community. And I just, for the convenience of the public, I wanted to do all this at once. So, Anna.
I wanted to just add a piece. I felt it was very important in this context that our law enforcement support.
Motion to suspend is on the floor. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we were adding ours first.
Well, right now is the question of whether to suspend the rules and then allow debate and vote on this. We'll come back to you. Anything else on suspension? All in favor of suspending the rules? Any opposed? That's unanimous. So we're back to discussion on the resolution. Anna?
Yeah, so one of the things that I felt was really important is to have our law enforcement also here in solidarity of the students and their effort for peaceful unification. And I wanted to hear their voices united with our efforts. Although they couldn't be here, Ken Lansing did send a letter to Leslin that I've shared with her, and there are pieces of this. I'm not going to read the whole thing that I wanted to share with the students specifically. So I'll just read pieces of it. Please accept this letter as a show of deep support regarding the resolution being brought forward by Legislator McBean Claiborne. Although the undersheriff and myself are not able to attend, we want to echo this resolution with resounding encouragement. The law enforcement community appreciates and celebrates the community members that take the time and effort to lead by example, by asking questions and sharing their experiences with others. Our goal is to protect all people, and the Students United group may not have law enforcement badges, but their role in protecting the community is just as important. Tompkins County is a unique culture in which we strive to circulate the message of acceptance, and the leaders of the Students United at Ithaca High School are a wonderful example of what our world desperately needs more of, hope. So I wanted to share that with the students specifically, that we stand united. Thanks.
Thank you. Is there any other discussion? All in favor of the resolution supporting inclusion and rejecting hateful threats made against Tompkins County residents, please raise your hand. Any opposed? Thank you. That's unanimous. Thank you all very much. So we will now go to public privilege of the floor for the public. And I would ask you, we've got blue forms for people. If you haven't signed up, you still can. By signing this, you agree to a three-minute time limit. We have the clock on the wall. I agree not to raise my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of the peace. I agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. And I agree that if I cause a disruption and I'm asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. So the first person I have is Gwen Bullock and then Reggie Teasley.
Allowing me to speak, and I'd first like to say congratulations to Racker Center. I was an employee there. I've submitted two letters about the fence at 1202 Ellis Hollow Road. The highway department did work and renovated the road, etc. First of all, I'd like to emphasize that the fence was not reinstalled properly and that it wasn't set back from the road in the line that it was intended. Therefore, I'm asking you to reconsider the decision of the highway department about their responsibility in why my fence fell down. And so I have offered you two estimates that I think are reasonable, and I left out a third one that was over out of the park, really. So that you could consider the 8-foot section that it fell down after it was reinstalled by the highway department or their representatives. And I'm in the process of getting a new fence built, set back further from the road. I'm not asking you to pay for a fence, just compensate for the part that fell down because it was not properly installed. Thank you.
I've got Reggie Teasley and then Joseph Campbell. Gwen, I would just say you did ask about recourse. If you want to appeal the decision of the staff person, you can send a note to Jason Molino. I think he's copied on some of those messages. Okay, Reggie Teasley.
Yeah, this is she. I'm Reggie Teasley. I'm from the city of Ithaca. I want to make a few comments. I want to talk about the resolution about the garbage incinerator. We sure don't need that. And the incinerator, that is. The resolution we do need. I want to comment about so-called natural gas to say we really don't need that. And I'm thinking of the Paris Accords, and I'm thinking of my grandchildren. And I hope they have a future, so I support your moves to eliminate natural gas, but I especially am here because of plastic bags. And I know that you're not going to vote on that tonight, but I just wanted to remind you that we have choices here. And I find plastic bags. I walk in Cass Park a lot. I find plastic bags in the inlet. I see them in trees. Perhaps you've looked at what's in the ocean and how sad that is, and the albatrosses who could outlive us, except that their offspring are filled with plastic bags, and so they're dying. But anyway, so we have a chance to get rid of them. So I guess this is a night where we're kind of sorting out what we do and don't want, and I really appreciate the resolutions that you have brought before you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Reggie. Joseph Campbell, please. And Elmer Ewing is next. Next.
Madam Chair, members of the legislature, thank you for this opportunity to speak. I'm talking about the resolution that you'll see later tonight, on the incinerator proposed for the town of Romulus, New York. My name is Joseph Campbell. I'm the president of Seneca Lake Guardian, an affiliate organization with the Waterkeeper Alliance, and we're committed to protecting and preserving the air quality, the water quality, and maybe most especially our way of life here in the Finger Lakes. This incinerator is a clear and present danger to all three of those things. I gave you each one of these handouts. The picture on the front is an active incinerator in Frederickstown, Maryland. The incinerator that they're proposing would dwarf this, by the way. So Circular Energy is this company that was incorporated in January of last year. They have no track record of doing anything, much less handling up almost 3,000 tons of municipal solid waste every day. The trash that they want to burn is not coming from around here. This trash is probably coming from long distances, much of it from the metropolitan New York area. It's an 18-story, 180-foot-tall building, 18 stories. The tallest building in Ithaca or Tompkins County is Bradfield Hall at Cornell University at 11 stories. It's a 26-story, 260-foot stack that will be emitting toxic material. Why should Tompkins County be concerned about this? Because these compounds, dioxins, furans, are some of the most toxic compounds known to man. There is no safe level of exposure. Mercury, lead, cadmium, sulfur dioxides, nitrogen oxides, and carbon monoxide are going to settle on grazing land, that cattle, agricultural land, and on the lake. Seneca Lake is downwind of this incinerator. So we already have advisories on eating the fish out of Cayuga Lake, eating the fish out of Cayuga Lake. Mercury contamination could make those fish inedible. Pregnant women especially are at risk. Incineration is the dirtiest and most expensive way to produce electricity. And that's not what this is all about anyway. This is not about producing energy. They call it waste to energy. It's not. It's a waste of energy. And I would urge you all to please vote in favor of this resolution. Help your neighbors in Seneca County and the town of Romulus. I also have the resolution that the town of Romulus passed opposing this incinerator themselves. So thank you very much for that opportunity to talk. And please do the right thing and vote for this resolution.
Thank you, Joe. And we can make copies of the. Did you give us the resolution from Romulus? We can make copies of that for everybody. Okay, Elmer Ewing. Thank you, Elmer Ewing, and then Irene Weiser.
I am Elmer Ewing. I live in the town of Ithaca. I fully support what was just said about the incinerator. I also support the resolution on the CNG, LNG, but I'm going to take my time speaking today about what was to be the resolution you had to consider, the one on banning single-use plastic bags. I support that resolution, too. According to an article in the Washington Post, by 2050, the weight of all the fish in our oceans will be exceeded by the weight of plastics there. Think of that. Even the present amount of plastics creates all kinds of problems, but to me the most ominous is the breakdown of the plastic into microparticles. These tiny, invisible particles absorb toxins, and they build up in the food chain. A recent article in the Ithaca Journal described how the plastic microparticles are present in large numbers, even in fish, I think it was 73% of the fish, taken from the very deepest levels of the Atlantic Ocean. Fish eaters, and I'm one of them, ingest 11,000 of these microparticles per year. And we have them in Cayuga Lake, too. The average American family uses 1,500 single-use plastic bags every year. The bags interfere with recycling, and 95% of the bags end up in landfills. Now, education on proper recycling of them has been ineffective. yielding only a 5% reduction in their use. And these so-called free bags aren't free. The hidden costs, probably something like 5 cents a bag, are passed on to consumers. As for the impact on low-income families, this is certainly a factor to take into account, but there are numerous ways of dealing with it. And we must not forget that the microparticles represent a health hazard to people of all incomes, ignoring that hazard because of the hardships placed on low-income people is no kindness to them or to anyone else. I thank you for the chance to speak, and I respectfully ask you to support all three of the bans. Thank you.
Thank you, Elmer. Irene Weiser and then Bill Demo.
Hi, thank you for this opportunity. I, too, am here to speak on the variety of different resolutions before you from the PDEC committee. It's been quite a winter. 70-degree days, our second bomb cyclone with hundreds of thousands of people throughout New York losing power, some of whom still don't have it restored. We can't afford to continue doing business as usual. We can't afford to keep doing plastic bags, plastic straws, paper bags. They're off my list as well. It's time that we learn to reuse, to recycle, to take what we have and to make the changes that we need to before it's way too late. So I'm here to stand up and to take a stand that we take all the steps that we can. And I thank the leadership and PDEC and those who've been on the committee to help bring these several ideas forward. So I'm here to also, of course, say that I support the resolution regarding NYSEG's RFP. I do want to clarify some misunderstandings about that. I've understood that some people think that we're going against what NYSEG wants by proposing this resolution. And in fact, it's quite the opposite. NYSEG's proposal actually suggested that LNG and CNG would only be approved as proposals that they would consider if the community went along with it. And so I'm here to urge you to not go along with that nightmarish option. Not only does it just find another way to deliver gas, and if we're going to deliver gas, we certainly shouldn't be doing it by the utterly dangerous and outrageous form of compressing and transporting gas is so frighteningly dangerous. They actually had a huge explosion at a liquefied natural gas plant in New York City back in 1940s. And since then, there's been no liquid natural gas in all of New York City. So I just want to urge that we absolutely do not want, under any circumstances, liquefied or compressed natural gas being transported on our roads. In addition, there's something else that can be done. You may recall a couple of years ago in this chamber, early on in the year, it was filled with signs saying no new gas. We have an opportunity now, this body or you as individual legislators, to weigh in with the city and the town of Ithaca as they're forming their green building policy to make sure that they rein it in. Caroline, Dryden, Lansing because of moratorium, but Caroline and Dryden are reining it in. The city and county need to be, or city and town need to be brought on board, and I urge you either collectively or individually to reach out to them and make sure that happens. Thank you.
Thank you, Irene. And if you want to stick around after public comment and speak to us as a town official from the town of Caroline, that'd be great. Okay. Well, I just thought I'd mention it. Bill Demo and then Robert Bland.
Okay, before I make my statement, I just want to say the reason why I'm here is to speak in support of the resolution you're going to be taking up later on about Charter Communications Spectrum and its decision with regard to WSKG carriage. So my statement is as follows. I was quite shocked to learn that Charter Spectrum was planning to drop WSKG as of mid-March. The only way I learned about it was through an email that Greg Catlin, CEO and president of WSKG, sent to subscribers, alerting them that WSKG had been told that it would be dropped from the Charter Spectrum lineup. This, to me, is an outrageous decision that flies in the face of the public interest and consumer choice in the Ithaca-Tompkins County viewing area. Apparently, Spectrum wants to make WCNY of Syracuse their preferred public television outlet and will drop WSKG because of their perception of duplication programming. I watch both PBS outlets, and I do not feel that there's much duplicate programming, and I find unique value in each of them. WSKG has made great effort in the past couple of years to provide expanded news coverage for the Ithaca area, as well as develop local programming, locally originated and locally relevant programming, expressions featuring local performing artists being one such example. I also strongly feel that our regional identity is much more bound up with the southern tier as opposed to the central New York area. I also fear that this move will seriously undermine WSKG's membership and underwriting in the Tompkins County area, which provides a disproportionate level of some financial support in terms of the overall region served. I find this high-handed and otherwise undisclosed move by Charter Spectrum to be typical of the corporate presence here. They raise their prices routinely. They spend countless dollars on marketing and advertisement. They have a near monopoly on local internet and cable services, and they apparently have little to no community engagement. If they did, they would never make such a clueless move as dropping what is essentially a local PBS affiliate. I realize that the regulatory environment concerning cable TV service has changed dramatically from the days of tight franchise agreements. Nevertheless, I do urge the county legislature, as the voice of the people of Tompkins County, to step up to engage with Charter Spectrum so that they may better understand and embrace their responsibilities as a public media provider in the Tompkins County area. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. Robert Bland and then Ann Klingensmith.
So my name is Robert Bland. I'm here to speak as a resident of the town of Lansing, not as a representative of my employer, Cornell University. So about the natural gas situation. I haven't read the resolution. I just want to talk in general about the need for natural gas in the town of Lansing, or the lack of what I perceive the need of. So I'm an energy engineer. I've been in the business for many decades, and I'm also a climate hawk. I think we should be electrifying just about everything, certainly transportation and heat. That electrification should come from renewable energy, so we should be building renewable energy infrastructure and electric transmission and distribution infrastructure and not additional natural gas infrastructure. I live north of where the natural gas is distributed in the town of Lansing. So the natural gas comes in from the south. The Dominion pipelines, too, are regulating and metering stations into Lansing or into Ithaca, goes up towards Lansing, and the bottleneck occurs at Route 13. North of Route 13, there's a moratorium on natural gas hookups because of low pressure there. The gas flows all the way up to Lansing High School and to like Mars Point. I live beyond that. And we don't need natural gas for heating. It's been shown that electrification through heat pumps, whether they're ground source heat pumps or air source heat pumps, is cost competitive on a life cycle basis, capital costs and operating costs with natural gas, and certainly cheaper than propane and fuel oil. My house is, when I moved in, it was heated by propane. It's now heated by an air source heat pump, and we source on an annual basis from solar energy. So, and it works very well. And it's a cold climate, air source heat pump. The technology works in cold days. So natural gas does not need to be burnt at a couple thousand degrees to heat water or air to heat a room to 70 degrees. And I think the technology is there. Tatum, our local engineer, has done two nice studies on residential buildings and commercial industrial around 20,000 square feet to show the cost competitive and the technical acceptability and that it's here. Those are online on the Tompkins County Cooperative Extension website. Where there is need for natural gas, maybe it's cooking in restaurants, maybe it's some industrial. I hope that the NYSEG process can free up some natural gas for those purposes so economic development can continue in Lansing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bert. Ann Klingensmith and then Marie McCray.
Hi. I'm a resident of Danby, and I'm also a member of the Environmental Management Committee. I'm here tonight to speak in support of the plastic bag ban resolution whenever it comes onto the docket. Ditto to what everybody else has said so far about plastic bags. It's not a mystery anymore to most of us that plastic breaks down into micro pieces and enters the environment and the ecosystem. And from a Homo sapiens-centric point of view, I find it pretty horrifying that it's now in the ocean, food chain. I think that it's also very likely one day for us to realize that it's the same thing can happen in soil. I haven't seen many studies about it, but I see plastic bags in Cornell ag lands all the time flying around. Plastic is born of petroleum, and we know we have to stop using petroleum. Petroleum's toxic for any number of reasons, besides the carbon dioxide problems that we have with it. And I think that if you step back and look at the big picture, economically, our economy doesn't exist outside the biological systems that make life possible on Earth. They're inside of it. If it's bad for biological systems that support human and other life on Earth, it's bad for our economy. So, the economy will change. If everybody bans plastic bags, yeah, there won't be companies making plastic bags. But you can't look at it from that small point of view. You have to look at it from the big point of view. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Anne. Now Marie McCray and then Dawn Montag. Montag? Okay, sorry.
My name is Marie McCray. I live in the town of Dryden. And I'm here today to deliver a letter from the Dryden Resource Awareness Coalition in support of the resolution I. When NYSEG recently sent out its RFP asking for submission of ideas that would make the addition of a supply of new methane and its attendant emissions and infrastructure unnecessary. NYSEG allows in that request that alternatives in the form of compressed natural gas or liquefied natural gas will be considered, and I quote, to the extent allowed and supported by the community. My community does not want a pipeline buried in the front yards of the residents along West Dryden Road. Neither do we want trucks and tanks full of similar fossil fuels to replace that pipeline. My community feels strongly that we must move away from burning fossil fuels to heat our homes, our businesses, heat our water. We have the technology to do it differently. Introducing trucked-in CNG and LNG fails the test of being an alternative and dooms the emission reduction goals of our county energy roadmap to failure. What part of reducing emissions do we not yet understand? What part of changing our vision of the future from business as usual to business with our grandchildren in mind eludes our practice? We need to stop this, folks. We need to stop using fossil fuels. I'm part of a community that would like to see the moratorium on new gas supply extended to the county. Heck, why stop there? Let's do load zone C. NYSEG asks whether the community supports CNG and LNG as alternatives. And I'm here today to ask you to say no. Thank you.
Thank you, Marie. Dawn, and then I've got Callie Bunnell.
Dawn Montagna, I'm representing Cornell Cooperative Extension, Way to Go Transportation Program. I'm speaking in support of a resolution for the Federal Transit Administration Mobility on Demand on-ramp technical assistance proposal. I don't know that it's yet on the agenda for tonight. It might be, or this is for when you do discuss it. The Federal Transit Administration is offering technical support for innovative, multimodal, integrated, accessible, and equitable community mobility services. A proposal will be submitted for funds that would help transportation providers, thinkers, coordinators in the county identify a mobility as a service program, which would actually be integrating various forms of transportation services into a single mobility service that is accessible on demand. So while we have a number of transportation options, and the work that I do with my team is to inform on the various transportation options in Tompkins County and surrounding counties and how to connect them, this would actually allow those to be integrated in a way that a person could access it through one portal and potentially pay through one portal. And this would help both in terms of reducing dependence on individual automobile use, so it has environmental impacts, it has economic impacts, and it also allows for those that have transportation as a barrier to be able to more efficiently and more accessibly access transportation. And I want to just read a summary paragraph from a 2016 report on recommendations that I believe is referenced in the resolution. And that is, in spite of a rich array of transportation resources in the county, we lack integrated mobility solutions that will appeal to, engage, and work for everyone in the community. A system that offers access to mobility for everyone will serve seniors efficiently and well. In particular, seniors need a system that is resilient, redundant, and reliable so they can have confidence, for example, that when they give up a car, they will not be isolated. This need applies to all Tompkins County residents and is particularly critical for low-income and rural residents. For example, local collective impacts, efforts to support school-family connections, food security throughout the county, and positive reentry from prison all identify transportation as critical and wanting, and an integrated transportation system such as this mobility as a service that would be supported through this on-ramp funding would be able to provide that. Thank you.
Thank you, Dawn. Callie Brunell and then Margot Brin.
Hello. I'm here to speak about the ban on plastic bags. And as many other people have said, plastic hurts. Reducing the use of plastic is a huge project. My friends and I started working to ban plastic bags from Ithaca, New York, about 6 years ago when I was five. I was motivated when I learned that plastics were harming the environment and hurting the animals. We have collected around 300 signatures to ban plastic bags in the last few years. Thousands of cities across the world have banned or placed fees on plastic bags. But in the U.S., 60,000 single-use plastic bags are used every 5 seconds. 8% of the world's oil is used to make plastic bags, and 95% of those bags end up in the dump or as litter. Millions of plastic bags end up in the ocean, making the Pacific garbage patch twice as big as Texas. It's poisoning and harming many animals. So I would like to ask you, why use something for 12 minutes that will last forever? Thank you.
Thank you so much. I think we have the next Distinguished Youth Award winner here. Margo Brin and then Brian Eden.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Margo Brin from the City of Ithaca, also here to speak to the future resolution on supporting New York State to in their ban of plastic bags. By the way, this is a painting that Chris Jones did. You can find it on the internet. It shows 60,000 plastic bags, which in the U.S. is used every 5 seconds in them. And people have really covered the main points. I just want to do just talk to this visual that I think Wegmans may have put out, which is showing how paper. Pardon? Oh, okay. And it shows that paper bags use so much more space than plastic bags, and therefore in the shipping, there's a lot more energy used in the shipping of paper bags than is used in the shipping of plastic bags. But my main point, besides the specific harm that plastic bags do, which other people have pointed out, is that that's what's called in logic a false dilemma. It's kind of like saying America, love it or leave it, like you support the war or you have to leave, you're not an American. We don't have to choose between plastic or paper. We can figure out, I mean, this is not going to the moon, which we have figured out. We can figure out how to get reusable bags to people. And as a matter of fact, with my grandchildren, I have set up sewing stations, places where we actually sewed cloth bags from scrap fabric for people. Thank you.
Thank you, Margo. Brian Eden and then Thomas Shelley.
Transitioning from the throwaway society, local waste minimization didn't begin with this plastic bag resolution. It began in the early 90s. The county had agreed to close its last landfill pursuant to DEC consent order. A county solid waste advisory committee was formed to site a new landfill. Frank Brodo, are you out there? Was the chair of this contentious committee. I'm sure he remembers it quite well. You may not be surprised to learn that no community in the county wanted a landfill. Therefore, the county decided to ship its solid waste to another county, which it has been doing for 25 years. Some local residents were not wholly happy with this outcome. Less community pressure to reduce our waste. We formed PROD, the People for the Reduction of Disposables, and we were involved in a bunch of activities in the early 90s. The county needed to build a transfer station to collect the waste for transshipment. There was an effort to site it as far from Ithaca as possible. We lobbied to have it located near the centrum of population to enhance recycling. We supported the Commercial Avenue site in the city. There was much opposition for fear of blowing papers and smelly garbage. It would ruin the business climate on Elmira Road. Thanks to superb planning and the county enforcement staff, such as Paul Coles, none of this came to pass. PROD was the first to lobby for a reuse center. And I'll skip through the rest of the history. I just want to come to the bottom line from all this activity. How many legislators here support our recycling program? It was also a very contentious thing when it first came up. In the beginning, it was derided as promoted by the unrealistic granola crowd. Yet we have diverted tens of thousands of solid waste from the landfill. About the bottle deposit bill, that was fought for a long time by retailers, until they got to keep all the unclaimed deposits. Would you have opposed it when it first came to pass? Many of us have been engaged with these issues for many years. If you're interested in learning more about our perspective on them, please contact me. Don't cast an uninformed vote in the future when this issue comes before you again. If you have no interest in these issues, please step aside and let us develop and implement innovative solutions to our waste problems. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Thomas Shelley and then Taylor Catlin. Just a second, Tom. Tom, just a second. Tom, just a second. As people have come in, if anybody who's come in would like to fill out a blue sheet for public privilege, we're obviously still doing public privilege, so just fill one out and come on out and send it up. Thanks.
Thank you, Martha. Good evening, everyone. My name is Tom Shelley. I live at 118 East Court Street, immediately across the street from the courthouse. So I'm spying on you most of the time you're here. I also am taping the show tonight just to see what it's like. I'm here to speak to a couple of different issues. One, very quickly, to support Joseph Campbell and those people struggle against the incinerator over in Romulus. And incinerators these days are just plain a stupid idea. What you're doing basically is taking the components of household waste, which are in many cases hazardous materials, and transporting them from one media, which is a solid waste, into another media, which is the air, which under federal regulations is illegal. So I think incinerators are not only a bad idea and very dangerous to the communities they're located in, they're probably illegal. I came here mostly to speak to the plastic bag issue. In 2007, I formed an organization called the Plastic Bag Action Group, SBAG, and we spent many, many years, 8 or 10 years subsequently, up until a couple of years ago, going to big festivals and other public venues and doing education around the plastic bag issue. And I'm encouraging the reuse issue of many different types of reusable plastic bags, from the nice polypropylene ones you buy at the store to homemade ones that grandmother made for you. So hopefully we're transitioning in that direction. And I've seen a big transition just with Wegmans supporting the reusable bags and many other organizations now hopping on the bandwagon. Plastic bags are a bad idea for many different reasons. They're actually part of a whole complex that's bad for us, which is plastic in general. The Five Gyres Institute says that since plastics began to be manufactured on a mass basis at the end of World War II, we have produced 8.6 billion tons of plastics. Plastics are very durable. 80% of the plastic that was made in this time of span is still with us in the environment in one form or another. It turns out that almost 40% of that plastic has wound up in the ocean. And I know a previous speaker said that the biomass will be replaced by 2050. The Five Gyres people actually think that there's more plastic in the environment now than there is biomass in our oceanic environment. And many of those plants, many of those species of plants and animals are being toxified or killed off by the toxic components that are embedded in the plastic as it degrades over time in the oceanic environment. So we're in deep doo-doo there. So I strongly encourage that you support, whenever it comes up, a resolution to ban plastic bags. Many of you have probably seen the governor's official committee report and analysis of the impact of single-use plastic bags. If not, I strongly urge you to find a copy and just skim through it at least. And we're here to support the bill from the two Democrats, New York Senate Bill 7760, which is to ban plastic bags and have a refund or charge for other papers. And then Bill de Blasio, of course, the mayor of New York, wants to get rid of plastic bags too. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom. Taylor Catlin.
Have a good meeting.
Thank you. Taylor Catlin, then Joe Wilson.
Thank you for the chance to speak. I'm here representing the Tompkins County Green Party, and I support the ban bag. And what everybody said before this, the incinerator seems primitive. But it seems to work at places like Aldi's and Green Star. And some ideas I had would be to have retailers put signage on cart corrals and entrances, reminding people, did you bring your bag? Or because I've myself forgotten to go back out to my car, grab it, bring it in. I think that's a great idea. Yeah, if we can move away from single-use everything, polystyrene containers has all kinds of things. Like they were saying, being less petroleum-based, it could influence our foreign affairs. And, yeah. yeah, thank you, and please support it.
Thank you very much. Joe Wilson and then Charles Geisler.
Good evening. My name is Joe Wilson. I live in the town of Dryden. I'm speaking in support of Resolution 12I on your agenda. I'm speaking for a group called West Dryden Residents Against the Pipeline. It's an independent group that has been following this issue, I'm tempted to say, since before you were born, but instead I'm going to say for the past 4 or 5 years. We applaud NYSEG for asking for community input. We oppose trucking CNG and LNG into our community because the increased use of methane will exacerbate global warming and will defeat the county's goals for reduction of natural gas consumption and the emissions that attend. We oppose trucking CNG and LNG into our community because the risks of public health and safety are well documented. The risks include those associated with the creation of CNG and LNG, the storage of CNG and LNG, its transport, the loading and offloading of CNG and LNG, and all of those will, if visited upon us in this county, increase those risks manyfold for our local population. We oppose trucking of LNG and CNG into our county because it will defeat our county's goals for reducing traffic and its attendant emissions generated by diesel and gasoline consumption. Many of us in this group have worked long and hard for many years to elect officials and get officials appointed in the town of Dryden who are working for environmental sufficiency, sustainability, and energy efficiency. They are doing what we have voted them into office to do. They're making many strides in that direction in Dryden. If we start trucking CNG and LNG into our county, then all of this work will go past down the drain. That's not the way this county is headed, and it shouldn't be. So we support your support for 12i. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Chuck Geisler, then Amanda Kirch-Gessner.
Charles Geisler, town of Dryden. I guess what I'd like to say is perhaps an additional note to the comments that were just made by Joe Wilson. Let me start by saying how appreciative I am, and many people I know, to NYSEG for listening to the community over these years, that there has been resistance and a lot of citizen outreach and activism to slow down and consider alternatives to the West Dryden Road pipeline. NYSEG has been exemplary, and the looming partnership is to be taken seriously. That said, I must say, obviously I'm in support of the same resolution 12I that was just referred to and that others have referred to. That said, I am quite baffled that we are considering the trucking of natural gas in any form as a possible part of an alternative strategy to the pipeline. It seems like a contradiction in terms. I'm baffled because many of you know that as of 2016 nationally in the United States, transportation surpassed energy generation as the single largest generator source of greenhouse gas emissions. So why on earth would we think that that could be part of the solution when it's part of the problem? This is really backwards to me. It's old wine in old bottles. And I hope you'll support the resolution to not go there. Thank you.
Thank you, Charles. Amanda Kirch-Gessner and Ed Bailey.
Good evening. Welcome. I'm here to introduce you to my friend Ed Bailey and the Community Coalition for Underserved Voices. My name is Amanda Kirchgessner, and I work at the State Diner. If you're familiar with that neck of the woods, there's a lot of traffic that covers the neighborhood I spend a good chunk of my life in. Been there for over 10 years, and I've seen it firsthand. You'll receive this written statement tomorrow. I handed it to the clerk. In 2018, in an effort to follow through with the goals set by the Ithaca Plan and the recommendations of coming out of an independent study of the Tompkins County Jail, Ithaca embarked on several alternatives to incarceration and human service expansions. I want to borrow something from Chuck. He said we need to slow down and explore the alternatives. Let's slow down and explore the alternatives. The Community Coalition for Underserved Voices was established in 2018 by a group of community members with the shared vision of building bridges as we transition from a system that criminalizes poverty, mental health, drug use, and homelessness to one that helps and supports our fellow community members, our friends, our neighbors, our families, and provide access to meaningful harm reduction-based services. Please, it is within our power, and we can do it. In particular, the coalition formed to fill a need for greater input from the voices of the people whom service expansions are meant to serve. The coalition is united by the mission to include and work with marginalized people in making critical planning decisions for new programs and reforms that most greatly impact their own future. This is about people. It's not about systems. This is about human beings. The Community Coalition for Underserved Voices places special importance on centering the voices of people who are at great risk of continuing to be underserved in spite of well-meaning reforms. Historically, the criminal justice system has disproportionately impacted communities of color. These same communities face unique difficulties in navigating the human services landscape. One of the key issues to come to the surface during conversations around human service reform in Ithaca is the lack of communication between different service providers regarding their overlapping clients. Who better to ask what's working and what's not than the people themselves, the people we keep talking about but not inviting to the table? Please. Some of them are in this room right now. We are united by the mission to give substantive voice to the marginalized people who have been impacted by the criminal justice system. I asked for another minute or two to finish my statement.
No, really, it's such a long night. One more sentence, Amanda.
I'm holding a petition of over 23 signatures. There are 25 more online. There are 5 homeless people who have signed this as homeless.
Okay, thanks very much, Amanda. You can hand that in. We'll get copies of it to everybody. Ed Bailey and then Martin Hatch.
My name is Edward Bailey, and thank you, Madam Chairperson, and distinguished ladies and gentlemen. I just wanted to let you know that I am the voice of the Community Coalition. They chose me to speak for them, to bring reason and talk and build a bridge between various groups and to represent the community. And I want to do that in a way that gives the people a voice at the table, and just to let everyone know that we do have the community's support and that we are not alone. And I just want to bring reason and give our community a chance to grow together. And if we don't do it now, right now, then future generations are going to be affected. We came here to speak about this, but I was also concerned about the plastics. I learned something that I didn't know, and that's affecting our community. So I just pray that that community, our community, hear all the voices that's being spoken tonight. It's for the children that we started out with. You know, they're the future. And we care about this cause and that cause, too. You know, I was moved by that. I was moved by this little girl who spoke. And that's important because it's her future. It's our future. And I just want to thank you for hearing me.
Thank you, Ed. Martin Hatch. And that's the last one. Is there anybody else?
Thank you very much. And I'm here to support Tompkins County application for an on-ramp program to receive technical assistance, create a business plan for mobility as a service. This particular program was recommended by a committee on which I served as a part of the collective impact study for the COFA portion of that in 2016. And at that point, we learned a great deal about it, but it fell well into our ideas of what the goals were for transportation accessibility and as a consequence, the decline in carbon emissions and a variety of other areas that would be a good results that would be obtained as a consequence. So if we go into this study, we can link up with many other committees and other actions that are being taken across the county, different segments of the county. I'm a member of the Cornell Planning Board, and there's a large transportation study going on there. It seems to me there's a segmentation that can be unified, and so we can come up with a comprehensive plan. I know Tompkins County is working on its own transportation plan as well. Mobility as a science is just simply a way of locating in one place an accessible site where people can call from different places around the county and find rides that will connect them. TCAT is working on these things. The Gadabout is working on linking up people with the different many options for transportation. Well, this is a sort of no-brainer to create a centralized access point where people can phone in and or access by a keyboard and find options for themselves. We have a 211 program, not necessarily highly used. This is a different kind of service. It's more unified and more global around the county. So I'd suggest that we go into this this study through the FTA on-ramp program. Thanks a lot.
Thanks very much, Martin. So I think I'd like to juggle the agenda here and move some resolutions so that there are a lot of people who've been waiting longer than George. So, hi, George. Maybe you're watching us on television to know that we're still on public privilege, but we'll get to you in a second. I want to ask for withdrawals and additions and do the consent agenda. That'll take care, I think, of a lot of the people who are waiting and then probably go to Anna's, to PDEC. So, all right, if I can first ask for resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda. Anna.
I'd like to withdraw the resolution H, a resolution in support of a statewide ban on lightweight single-use plastic retail bags, and for to keep it all in order and tight, if I could make a statement of why, that would be
sure, good. Go ahead.
So this is just a statement in general. In response to the people who've come today, I did want to acknowledge this is not a new thing that we're trying to do. There are countries on every single continent that have done this. There are over 80 municipalities in the country. An entire state has done this. We have 11 municipalities in New York State already that have done this. We're way behind the curve on this one. We have a supermarket right here in Ithaca that has been doing this since its inception, Aldi's, that does this all over the United States. So they've proven that it's possible in industries that currently show some resistance. This does require a culture shift. It is less convenient, but we did it for thousands of years, and I'm sure we can do it again. The production of plastics is on the rise, and this is due to petroleum companies that have increased their production significantly due to fracked gas. And this is a mechanism that they can use to utilize that glut of fuel that they're pulling out of the earth. So I think that it's something we really need to pay attention to, because we are going to see a rise, and any opportunity that we have to reduce it, I think, is very important. And that was the intention of this resolution. I'll end by saying that the reason that it was removed is not because we're not interested, but we did discover that on February 20th, the state, there was an introduction of a Senate bill and an Assembly bill that is more progressive, in fact, than what we are proposing in this resolution. In this resolution, we are suggesting a ban on plastics and a fee on paper bags. Several people have pointed out tonight that actually the carbon footprint of paper bags is significant and equal to, if anybody has read the Plastic Bag Task Force, New York State Plastic Bag Task Force report.
Anna, I kind of meant just that you could explain why you're withdrawing it and sort of go back to committee.
That's the last statement that I'm making, which is that they are now requesting a ban on both paper bags and plastic.
So this will go back
to
committee.
That is the purpose of bringing it back to committee, to align our resolution with the state bills.
Okay, good. And we'll have full debate when it does come back here. And Deborah, I think I saw your hand.
Yeah, bear with me because I've never done this before. I would like to add something to the agenda. It's Resolution K, ID number 7667. In your folder on the yellow sheets, authorizing the Federal Transit Administration Mobility on Demand On-Ramp Technical Assistance Proposal.
I have 7664.
Oh, I may have read it wrong.
Okay, 7664. Mike seconds that to put it on the agenda, so we need to vote to put it on. All in favor of adding it to the agenda tonight? And they'll describe why later. Okay. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. So let's do the consent agenda. That'll cover a few things. And even though most of the public is gone, I just want to say it's really great to have so many members of the public talk, you know, come and take their time and talk to us. We really appreciate that folks think the legislature matters. It's great. Really important to have your voices. So I will read items for the consent agenda. If you want something pulled off, just call out. Resolution A, appointment of temporary hearing panels for 2018. That's item 7628. Resolution B, and I think, Deborah, this comes off on this first one on spectrum.
Yeah, the next two come off because an innocent bystander made changes.
We have some revisions in your red folder. So B and C are coming off the consent agenda. Resolution D, budget adjustment for Farmers Market Promotion Program grant from the United States Department of Agriculture's Agricultural Marketing Service for Agritourism Development, Planning and Sustainability Department. That's ID 7657.
Off, please.
D, okay. D is off? That's what you're asking? Okay. Got it. Okay. Resolution E, resolution in opposition to the proposed garbage incinerator in the town of Romulus, Seneca County, ID 7632. Resolution F, authorization to accept contributions in support of the Finger Lakes Rideshare Projects, Ithaca-Tompkins County Transportation Council, ID 7612. And Resolution G, increase in hours and budget adjustment. PROS, the Personalized Recovery-Oriented Services and Care Management Positions, Mental Health Services Department, ID 7610. And I have appointments. Okay. All right, too many papers here. I had them just right here. All the appointments. There they are. Oh, to the Strategic Tourism Planning Board, Monica Roth, the Environmental Management Council, Reggie Teasley, and Maureen Bolton, Water Resources Council, Kristen Hitchka, Southern Tier East Regional Planning Development Board, Katie Borgella, Anna Kellis, and Martha Armstrong, and the Homeownership Oversight Committee, Deborah Dawson. So that is the consent agenda. Can I get a motion? Moved by Rich, seconded by Amanda. All in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Okay. And we'll get to reports, we'll get to public privilege, we'll get to George. George will be next after we do. Okay. Let's go to who's waiting for what? So, Joe, we did Romulus, we did the incinerator. That's one of the ones we just finished.
Mobility management.
Mobility management. Okay. Resolution, the one that we added, Resolution K. Deborah, you want to take this one?
Okay, well, the main reason this is being added. Wait,
move it first.
Oh, sorry. I move it.
All right. I need to read the title and the number.
Okay. I move Resolution Number K, ID Number 7664, authorizing the Federal Transit Administration Mobility On Demand On Ramp Technical Assistance Proposal.
Seconded by Mike Lane. So go ahead and describe.
Okay. So this is a proposal that allows Dwight Mengel to apply for a technical assistance grant under this new mobility on-demand on-ramp program that the FTA has recently announced. The deadline is March 21st. This came to the Transportation Committee last week. The reason that I am moving it as a legislator filed resolution is because it would have to go through PDAC ordinarily as the program committee, and PDAC doesn't meet before the 21st. And so I just inquired of PDAC members, and they said it was all right with them if we moved it this way.
Okay, great. Thank you. Is there any other discussion? All right, ready to vote? All in favor, please, of Resolution K, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much, and thanks for moving this along outside of the normal process. Thanks, Dwight.
Thanks, Dwight.
Let us go to, I think we should go to PDEC. You have, so you've got D, and then couple of other resolutions that people are waiting for. All right, Anna?
Do you want me to go through all of these now, or do you want me to go to the ones that people are waiting for and come back to it?
Why don't you go to, you've got D from the consent agenda, and then you've got, you've taken H off, and you have I, but just.
You have D, E.
No, E passed.
Yeah,
I thought that was pulled off.
Yeah, I'm just looking for an extension.
Yeah, so it's pulled off.
No.
No, you pulled off D, the farmer's market one, right?
Exactly.
What?
Yes.
Not E. Okay. So the incinerator is done. So we're looking at D, H, and I. No, I'm sorry, D and I, but we don't need a whole report now. Let's take care of the resolutions.
All right. D is budget adjustment for farmer's market promotion program grant from the United States Department of Agriculture's USDA. Agricultural Market Service for Agritourism Development, Planning and Sustainability Department.
Is there a second? Second by Deborah. Mike?
I'm just looking for an abstention. It's marketing money. I intend to go after that money for billboards. So they bought billboards in the past. To great effect, by the way.
You said extension. You mean recusal? You want to?
I don't want to vote.
You want to recuse yourself.
Recuse.
You don't abstain. Okay.
Abstention.
Got it. You're recusing from the vote. Any other discussion? All in favor of the resolution D, please raise your hand. Any opposed? Any abstentions? That's one. One abstention. All right. That passes with one abstention. And then you've got I.
I is the resolution opposing the use of compressed natural gas, CNG, or liquefied natural gas, LNG, in response to New York State Electric and Gas's non-pipe alternative request for proposals. So move.
Seconded by Deborah.
Just to introduce this, there's actually not much that our extremely educated public has not already said, so I wanted to thank them for that. I would reiterate that this is not a proposal against NYSEG, that this is simply addressing a statement that was put in the RFP that is stating that they would consider proposals that included trucking in CNG and LNG
if it was acceptable to the community. This is a resolution simply saying that while they're in the process of considering RFP proposals, that we would like them to know that this is not, in fact, an acceptable component to be incorporated into a proposal as an alternative to the pipeline. So I'll open it up for anyone else.
Thanks, Anna. Mike Lane.
I fully support this. I don't think there's any safe way to transport large volumes of compressed natural gas or liquefied natural gas. If you think about the ocean-going ships that are tankers for that, they're loaded far offshore, the pipelines that run out to load them, for fear that there could be an explosion. One of those ships would be the equivalent energy of a small tactical nuclear weapon if it blew up. We don't need trucks or large tanks in Tompkins County. True, we looked at possibly running a bus on it at one time, but we don't need this explosive capability. Very recently, one of these trucks, I can't remember where it was, blew up, and it went viral that there was the YouTube video of it just spraying across the highway. So I'm glad we're doing this. I personally think that if you've got to transport gas, you better do it in pipes, but certainly we don't want to do it in trucks.
Thank you, Mike. Anyone else? Mike Sidwell. Well,
thank you very much. I mean, I'm clearly going to be the opponent here. So, you know, I've heard a lot about colluding with Russia over the past 18 months, and I always find that really interesting because really there is no better friend to Russia than those opposing the use of natural gas. Russia at one point was the world leader in natural gas, heating all of Europe, that is, until the United States overtook them just a few months ago. That aside, we are voting on whether to voice our opposition to a solution to the natural gas moratorium that hasn't even been proposed yet. NYSEG decided to forego building a pipeline after a great fight in favor of looking for alternatives. That request for proposal, now just 2 months old, and the first proposals haven't even been submitted yet, and already the county doesn't like the parameters of the deal. I kind of feel a little bit like Lando praying that Darth Vader does not alter the deal further. So the only reason to pass this resolution is because you feel the proposals that could replace a gas pipeline will be so weak that we and they will not stand up to the challenge by CNG or LNG. It is no secret I see natural gas as a bridge fuel. Hundreds of trucks run through Lansing every single day. I would much rather see those trucks powered by natural gas than diesel. But again, you know, self-proclaimed environmentalists do not see the wisdom in that or that choice, and I cannot understand why they do not. The power plant wanted to repower with natural gas a decade ago. If they had done it at the same time as Cornell did with their power plant, that would have been years of no coal use, years of a much lighter footprint to get our electricity, and we would now be much better getting our power from here than from gas-fired power plants in Canada and Pennsylvania. And that's all because we just don't want to make it here in this county. Everyone in this room, except for Ann, had to throw you in there, Ann, gets their heat from natural gas or oil. I don't see a race to give up that heat source anywhere in Ithaca or the town of Ithaca. I don't see the race to switch to heat pumps and put in solar panels like I have. And again, have to refer back to Ann because you really do walk the walk, actually, on that one.
Actually, that's two of us now.
Oh, two now. Okay. Just saying.
Called solar farms.
Okay, guys. Let's let Mike finish.
So anyway, the increased electricity needed to run those pumps, we need to get that from someplace. Again, still pushing that. Again, like the Priuses and heat pumps of today, they are all running on natural gas. You just don't see it. They're running on natural gas from someplace else. I'll close with saying that it's true that a number of multi-unit housing projects in Tompkins County, they are going with heat pumps, even though they do have access to natural gas. So why isn't Lansing afforded that same choice? Why are those in the room so sure that Lansing developers, over all the other developers, would choose natural gas when, according to you, that heat pumps are so far superior? I mean, I don't want to brag, but, you know, we do have a 90% graduation rate from high school in Lansing. I'm pretty sure that the people in Lansing know what's what and that they would make superior choices if they're available. Just a couple of numbers just so you have those. I mean, 2012, $34.3 million.
2013, 38.4 million therms. 2014, 40 million therms. And 2015, 41.3 million therms. Every year it's going up natural gas use. It's in this county. And that's not coming out of Lansing. So I would suggest that maybe we look at our own doorsteps before we go saying, oh, we should keep that moratorium in place because, you know, those Lansing people, they're just going to go hog wild with it. If you folks are willing to give up your natural gas, then by all means, we will take it. So thank you very much.
I'm going to take a turn, if you don't mind. I don't know, Mike. We've said the same things. We've had this conversation many times, and I'm afraid I don't understand the blind spots here. Let me just mention that Cornell switched from coal to gas. They made the plans for it before fracking even began, and they did the switch right about when fracking was starting, and they did not understand the additional impact of fracking, and further that the research at Cornell itself about the greenhouse gas damage done by methane on a 20-year time scale being 100 times worse than carbon dioxide, they now have admitted, and it's in their climate action plan, that they really wish they'd realized this before they made that investment in the gas plant. They are working on deep source, earth source heat as a potential long-term alternative. In the meantime, that's actually Cornell's paying attention to their own science. This is absolutely what NYSEG asked us to do. This is in the RFP. I mean, and they said basically we will consider CNG or LNG if the community is okay with it. They would not have put that in there if they didn't want to know what we thought. It's like I've never seen an RFP with that in there. They put it in there on purpose. So I think this is an entirely appropriate and timely and important resolution to support. I believe that, everybody sort of learns and changes and makes new investments at a different time scale. I've got the Dryden Solar sign-up card on my desk. I'll get there as soon as I can. We all are working towards different kinds of energy, renewable and reduction of use of energy at different time scales. Some are earlier adopters than others. I am confused as to why the town of Lansing doesn't see this as a huge gift of NYSEG coming in with millions of dollars to invest in fuel switching, invest in renewables, invest in efficiencies in the town of Lansing. Now, we've argued, and we have a phone call coming up next week, we've argued that we really wish the entire county were included in the RFP. They have their reasons. I don't know if we'll get them to change that. But even if it just goes for Lansing, this is going to be millions of dollars of investment in the built environment of Lansing coming from ratepayers around Load Zone Z. I think y'all should be really excited about it and jump on board. So I think this is a very narrow resolution. It simply is responding to NYSEG's question, and I hope everybody supports it. Any other discussion? Need a vote? All right. All in favor of resolution I, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That is one opposed, and how many of us are here tonight? That would be 12 to 1. All right, thank you. I guess we're just going to keep fighting about it, Mike. Anna, you have that's it for your resolutions. Let's go to George. I don't see anybody waiting for the spectrum resolutions. Is that right? Okay. Anybody else waiting for anything else? Okay. George McGonigal, welcome, and thank you for your patience.
Thank you. I'd like to start by congratulating the Tompkins County Legislature for how you honored those young people tonight. I was watching their faces, and they were beaming. and they not only deserve your support, but I think they need it. And so I want to congratulate you all, Democrats and Republicans. I think you did a great job tonight. Secondly, it's a well-known fact I like to brag. The young lady who spoke about the plastic bags, Callie, is my next-door neighbor. Wasn't that amazing? I mean, that was so clear and so to the point. I'm very proud of her. And she's also Lesland's constituent as well. And
so how many years do you have to worry about? You have, like, until she runs against you?
Oh, I'll be dead soon, so it doesn't matter. She may run my next campaign, actually. And her friend, her best friend, Flossie, is the daughter of my former colleague, Josephine Martel. And they're really good kids. And Maddie Carroll, I also know very well, and she spoke really well, too. And so thank you for listening to them. The Common Council meets tomorrow night. We have two resolutions about TV stations and charter spectrum. The first one is the one we started with, which is about WENY out of Elmira, which they're dropping, although you can still get it if you have a spectrum cable box, but it's on channel 1,210. They still carry that local news. And the other resolution is about WSKG, which there's no question has significant ties to this community. They have 2,300 members in Tompkins County. A number of their board of directors are from Ithaca. They have a beat reporter now covering Tompkins County. So these are important issues, and I'm glad that the county legislature's on board and basically doing the same thing we are. The new commissions, the four new commissions that the city has organized to replace a number of committees, they are going to be voted on tomorrow night, and they should meet for the first time in April. So we'll see how that goes. That's it. That's all I got.
Thank you so much, George. Appreciate that. Mike Lane.
Hi, George. The cable system drives us all crazy. Do you know where what the status of the city's franchise is? Where are you in that agreement at this point? I think possibly the city is the only municipality that still has a working franchise with them.
It's being negotiated right now, as a matter of fact, a new agreement. It has nothing to do with programming, unfortunately. It has to do with public access and that type of thing.
Right, because that's always been the reason for the city franchises to make sure Pegasus was supported. Otherwise, they would just run tapes or something on the
right.
Three stations.
Right.
But I guess I'll ask you later, but I don't understand where you are with your negotiations, how you're doing negotiations this time, whether you have a negotiator. I know in the past they've done that.
I don't know much about it either. I do know that the city attorney has been involved in the negotiations.
Okay. Thank you.
Rich.
Hi, George. Thank you for coming in. I noticed there's some site work, it looks like, happening at the end of Teganic Boulevard. Is that project underway to extend the bridge at the south end of Teganic?
Well, it'll start this construction season. It's going to be a two-year event because originally they thought they could do it in 1 year, but they decided that the soil is so soft down there that they were going to work on the approaches to the new bridge first and let it settle for a year, and then build the bridge the second year. So I haven't noticed that myself. I drive by there all the time. I haven't noticed it, but it probably is that.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, thanks a million, George.
Thanks very much.
Appreciate your coming in. Why don't we, if you want to wait a minute, we can do the spectrum resolutions that we've got. Okay. So should we go to Deborah, or is this Algeo?
Deborah, take it.
Okay. Let's start with Resolution B. Resolution requesting Charter Communications Spectrum and the Federal Communications Commission to restore WENY to Channel 19 of its basic cable service to subscribers residing in Tompkins County.
And second by Dan. Thank you for the additions and the changes here. Is everybody clear on the language? Kathy?
The resolution that came out of committee should be the one that's moved first.
That's in our packet, right?
Okay. Correct.
Okay.
Okay.
That's right. So then we would do a substitute. All right. Let's just rewind the tape. Okay, Jim. all right. How about Dan? Why don't you... Can we just start over, Kathy? Boss?
Sure.
Thank you. Awesome. I'm glad Kathy's going on vacation, guys. We're going to be in trouble for 2 weeks. So, all right, Dan, why don't you go back to packet page 6 and
yes.
The long title that's there.
Happy to do it. I would like to move Resolution B. Resolution to request Charter Communications / Spectrum and the Federal Communications Commission to enter into dialogue with municipal officials representing Tompkins County to clarify or reconsider the county's placement in Syracuse's designated market area and to restore WENY to Channel 19 of its basic cable service to subscribers residing in Tompkins County.
So moved and seconded by Shauna. Now, Deborah, would you like to move to substitute?
I would like to move to substitute Resolution B, ID number 7661 in your packet, entitled Resolution Requesting Charter Communications Spectrum and the Federal Communications Commission to restore WENY to Channel 19 of its basic cable service to subscribers residing in Tompkins County.
And second, well, you just ask if that's
friendly.
Is that friendly to the mover and the seconder?
Yes.
Seconder, was that Sean?
Sean.
Okay, great. So thank you very much, Kathy, for keeping us straight. The detail here that the committee did, GO committee did vote on this resolution. And so what we have is just enough language changes that we needed to do a substitute. So, Deborah, go ahead again. Move to substitute.
I moved to substitute. I thought I just...
Oh, I'm sorry. You know what? It's
I'm
clear
so
we're needing... We're getting close to recess time. I need a Luna bar. Okay. So what's in front of you is the revised language that's been accepted as friendly. Any discussion? Mike.
I just want to make sure that since this is going to the FCC, you don't want to add a little net neutrality rider on there.
Sure. Is that a friendly amendment? Okay. Any other?
I don't think it was meant to be friendly.
Well, Rich.
I just want to say, Deborah, thank you for all your work on this. I know this was involved a lot of back office research. So thanks for doing it because this is important.
I agree, and I would put... And underlined the whereas that is underlined here, numerous residents of Tompkins County have communicated their anger at Spectrum's decision and asked county officials to speak up on their behalf. That is absolutely true. I've heard a lot about this. I've reached out to the Attorney General's office, and they're giving me a phone number of somebody who I can make noise with, so this is definitely going to help. Ready to vote? All in favor of the resolution, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Terrific. Let's go to C, and Dan will do the same.
Yeah, I'd like to move Resolution C, resolution to request Charter Communications / Spectrum to enter into dialogue with municipal officials representing Tompkins County to reconsider its decision to remove WSKG from basic cable service to subscribers residing in Tompkins County.
Thank you. Seconded by Amanda. Deborah.
I move to substitute resolution number C in your packet, ID 7662, resolution requesting Charter Communications Spectrum to continue WSKG as part of its basic cable service to subscribers residing in Tompkins County.
And is that second? Is that friendly to the movers and seconder?
Yes.
Okay, very good. So the new resolution is in front of you. Any discussion? Ready to vote? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. And I will take the certified resolutions when we're done here tomorrow and kind of ship them to the Attorney General's office, one of the things I plan to do. All right. Let's see. I think we've cleared the room of everybody who was waiting for something specific. So how about we go back to legislative privilege of the floor? I think that's where we should pick up. Would anybody like to address the body?
You want to take a break first or do you want to
What?
You want to take a break first or do you want to?
We got 10 minutes before 7:30. Let's go till 7:30. Deborah.
And now for something completely different. I want to preface my remarks by saying that I like guns. I've been trained on weapons, both in the military and out of the military. I've owned weapons. I like target shooting. That said, I happened to see something on social media today put out by the NRA, which apparently has its own online television station. And imagine that I'm Dana Lesh, and I'm saying this to you to ominous background music. We've had enough of the lies, the sanctimony, the arrogance, the hatred, the pettiness, the fake news. We are done with your agenda to undermine voters' will and individual liberty in America. So, to every lying member of the media, to every Hollywood phony, to the role model athletes who use their free speech to alter and undermine what our flag represents, to the politicians who would rather watch America burn than lose 1 ounce of their own personal power, to the late night hosts who think their opinions are the only opinions that matter, to the Joy-Ann Reeds, the Morning Joes, the Mikas, to those who stain honest reporting with their partisanship, to those who bring bias and propaganda to CNN, The Washington Post, and The New York Times, your time is running out. The clock starts now. So we've reached a point where a trade organization for gun manufacturers is free to label anyone who disagrees with them as sanctimonious, arrogant, hateful, petty liars. I find it ironic that an organization that has elevated the Second Amendment to the status of the 11th Commandment seems so eager to disregard the amendment that precedes it. This speech is a direct threat to our press from a trade organization that knows full well that its target audience is well-armed. And that target audience includes people who are more willing than the average bear to solve their problems by reaching for a gun. So, to me, this is hate speech. It's apparently purpose-built to incite violence against anyone with a public podium to express an opinion that gun manufacturers disagree with. And that includes members of our press, which is, to me, the basis of a functioning democracy. So aside from the hypocrisy and the irony, this is simply, to me, unacceptable. I'm sorry to have taken additional time on a night that was already so busy, but this is timely and very concerning to me. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Deborah. Do I guess, Mike, you have something to say?
I do. I wasn't going to because it was withdrawn. But
then Amanda. Okay. First, I want to say, since we're not actually voting on this, the plastic bag resolution tonight, I really want everybody to remember everything that's been said tonight about it. When the new resolution comes back to us, you'll all sit quietly and remember everything that's been said, and we don't have to say it all again. Okay? Okay.
I'm certainly not hauling these back up here.
Okay.
Yeah, it's part of the reason I want to do this now. Cause,
good exercise.
You know, it was good exercise. So, well, thank you, Madam Chairwoman, for the floor. I guess, you know, I listen to all the speakers, and I'm again amazed. I am surprised that a proposal that is not based on science but emotion would once again be in front of this county legislature. I don't know why I'm surprised. I mean, this is the second time in less than a year that the Environmental Management Council has failed to investigate the science behind a proposal that will have far-reaching negative impacts on our people and on our environment. It's unclear even today where the EMC drew its information from. If it looked at both sides of the issue, or if it just proceeded with a preconceived notion not based on science. An advisory agency to me is supposed to advise the legislature. In essence, it's supposed to do the work that the legislature may not have the staff or the time to do, and yet I find myself doing the investigative work that they have failed to do. One would think that if we were investigating a plastic bag ban, you might want to pick up the phone and just talk to one of the largest users of those bags. In this case, I talked to Gary over at Wegmans. He's the manager over there. A quick talk with him showed how this ban would raise the carbon footprint of shipping bags to Tompkins County by sevenfold. That's a lot. That's seven tractor trailers for every one tractor trailer of plastic bags. I mean, you can see the difference right here. This is 1,200 bags, 1,200 paper bags. This is 1,200 plastic bags. And you already heard from the people that came and spoke earlier. Bags, 95% of them are going into the landfill. So this is the difference in volume you folks want to put into the landfill. You want to put this many paper bags. And by the way, the landfill, it is not a compost heap. It is a tomb. Things don't break down. They stay. They're supposed to stay because you want that thing to be stable. You don't want it collapsing in upon itself. So anyway, I'm asking you to look at the difference of volume. You know, the people that throw away these plastic bags are going to throw away the paper bags. It's not like there's going to be some giant change of, oh, my gosh, I'm going to now recycle the paper bags. You know, I wanted to say, too, somebody kind of sneered at Wegmans before. They are a standout when it comes to recycling. They have their own manager of sustainability. They're doing everything that you want companies to do. You know, I got this letter from the sustainability manager over there. You know, it has been long Wegmans' position that unintended consequences come from banning anything. And we are not in favor of adding fees or taxes that may burden our customers to solve environmental issues and concerns. And I want to read some of the commentary from him. He's like, you know, their plastic bags, these right here, they are 40% recycled plastic. That is returned to our stores by their own customers. So Ithaca is doing pretty great. They recycle 50% of the bags in 2017. So 50, you know, out of the bags that went out, 50% came back, they recycled them, 40% of these bags are now made of those bags. When it comes to limiting the bag options available to consumers, and I believe him on this, you don't have to believe me. I mean, this is what this person does and goes to school for at a very big organization. You know, he's not doing it in theory. He's doing it on the ground. Increasing the use of usable bags, reusable bags, is by far the best way, so that's what everybody's saying, to reduce the number of paper and plastic bags used. However, it is important to consider the additional resources it takes to manufacture those reusable bags. If not used by consumers on a regular basis to replace paper and plastic bags, reusable bags are no better for the environment, and they are also not recyclable. You need to use one of those reusable bags 14 times, so you literally have to bring it with you every time you go. If you're using a cotton bag, 114 times. So I'm not really seeing where we're losing this information. It is out there. This was a simple Google for a lot of this information. Plastic bags, they are the second best option for the environment when looking at the science. They are made from natural gas, not oil, and are very light compared to reusable and paper bags, requiring fewer trucks for transportation. Again, it comes down from trucking. It's, again, like the salt mine. If the salt mine were to close, you have to truck the salt in from further away, and it blows up your carbon footprint. Environmentally, paper is the least preferred of the three bagging options. I'm sorry, a tax doesn't cut it. We're going to tax people 5 cents per bag, and they're not going to use them? Of course they're going to use them. I know a lot of people who don't save their cans. They recycle them, but it's not like they're going to the store to return them. And if they're going to throw away the plastic bag, they're going to throw away the paper bag. Paper bags are heavier. They take up more space, as you can see. 90% more resources and energy just to make the paper bag compared to plastic.
Due to the chemicals used in the manufacturing process, paper is also very harmful to our waterways. So, yeah, you don't see it like you do the plastic, but it's there. And it's the same thing with the carbon footprint on the trucks. You don't see it. It's a trade-off, like the one man was saying. He was arguing the other side. So like Martha would say, I don't understand you, Mike. I don't understand what he's talking about either. Because he clearly prefers having pollution in the atmosphere as opposed to pollution we can see and clean up. So there are many factors, as Jason Wadsworth, I pulled from him pretty liberally right there. The primary problem with plastic bags, and I get this, is that if they end up in the ocean, marine animals eat them and they look like food. I've seen them in the water. Yes, they do. I understand plastic pollution in the oceans is a severe problem. I do understand that. I know what they're talking about. I'd also like to acknowledge that 95% of the plastic pollution in the oceans comes from 10 rivers. None of those rivers are in the United States of America. If you want to clean up the garbage patch of the Pacific, you have to go to the Yellow River. You have to go to two rivers in India, three in China. These are the rivers where they're dumping the plastic into the rivers and they're going to the ocean. We do a pretty good job of recycling here. You know, I don't know why we don't use the knowledge that we have for recycling to increase the recycling of these plastic bags. A ban just simply won't work. Wegmans, as they've already said, they make their bags from 40% recycled. So the people that shop at Wegmans clearly are doing a pretty good job. I'm also going to say it's highly unlikely that if you switch to paper that those who will come who don't recycle the plastic bags will recycle the paper. A lot of them are going to end up in landfills. Our landfills are going to be that much more full. We're going to have to close landfills easier or sooner. And these plastic bags definitely take up a lot less space. And again, if you don't want to believe me, there's some links here. Green Living, love to know why we shouldn't. Tree Hugger magazine has this. I mean, this is not like I went to Fox News and said, oh, let's get some information. There's a lot of environmentalists who are seeing the difference. And if you want, go look up Austin, Texas. Go look up California and how it's been a negligible difference. So thank you very much.
Okay. It's now 7:34. You know, this is why we're here. We're here to debate. And I think, you know, this is going to be a good conversation. I really do hope we don't have to say all of it again in 2 weeks or 4 weeks. Okay. Let's take a 10-minute break, Amanda, and then Anna, and then anybody else will pick it up. Thank you very much. Okay, folks. We are back. Everybody take their seats, please. I've got Amanda and then Anna for legislator comment.
Okay, lovely. Well, thanks, Mike, for that presentation. I don't have a lot to say. So the whole thing for me is that with the plastic bags is just the bigger idea that we need to cut back on fossil fuels in general, and this is one way to do it. I'd love to see a ban on plastic straws and plastic utensils and styrofoam and plastic in general, but for me it's one step at a time. So I look forward to having this resolution come up again, either for a local level or to encourage the state again. And I think some more debate would be good. I'll prepare a statement. Okay, I also wanted to say thank you to all the people from the public who came and spoke. I think, you know, it's very valuable to me to hear what folks have to say, and also people who write us letters and send emails. I appreciate that. And then the last thing I want to say is that next Wednesday, March 14th, is a student walkout day. LACS, the high school, and I think Boynton and DeWitt and Newfield High School have student groups that are organizing a walkout. It'll be 1 month since the shooting in Florida, and the students there have encouraged this walkout, and schools all over the country are going along with it. I've been in contact with the young lady at IHS who is organizing this. She's amazing.
I'm really glad the students who died almost a month ago. So LACS is also having a walkout. My son goes to LACS, and he's 11. He's a little not sure what it's all about, but there's older student organizers who are actually going to be talking with all the kids tomorrow. And LACS is a school that encourages this, and they're welcoming any of their students to participate in this activism. So I would encourage any parents out there, or if you have neighbors or nephews or, you know, friends that have high school students, to support them in being activists and in this way. Or if you want to go and stand on the sidewalk at IHS, please do. I'll be there.
Thanks, Amanda. I've got Ann and then Rich.
One of the things I obviously to thank everyone who came, and Deborah, thank you so much. That was very powerful and really important. And one of the things that that has been frustrating me is the discussion of the Second Amendment, which I want to just read that, which says, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, comma, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. For anybody who studied English, that first half is extremely important. It is the context to which the second half is embedded. And the NRA has removed this almost continuously through, not almost, always, including the writing on their walls of their national center. And I just want to point that out. I think it speaks for itself, and I hope that we continue to remember that in the conversations. Yes, this was written hundreds of years ago. I think that we also need to keep that in context for what was being experienced at the time. But I'm going to leave it there, but I hope that that continues to be a part of the conversation and everything we talk about. I did want to say to Callie, who came here earlier tonight, the first time I met her, she was about 3 weeks old, and to see her now is exceptionally amazing. I feel a tremendous sense of pride, and I had nothing to do with it. Shamsi and Joel, I just wanted to say to you, you have raised one of the most amazing daughters, and if you are out there and watching, I wanted to honor you. You are amazing people, as is the whole family, very honorable, and have been doing work as a collective three generations family in social justice, environmental justice, for as long as I've known them. So the last thing that I did want to say, and I am not going to belabor this, of course, I'm incapable of not responding a little bit to what you said, Mike, and I acknowledge that wholeheartedly. You gave us tremendous fodder to argue with. And again, I will save that, some of it, for the next argument. But I would say that it's natural gas, not oil, therefore this is not an issue, leaves me so profoundly baffled given the reports that we have had, including our very own GHG emissions inventory report that talks very eloquently about what we now know with respect to methane and its impact on GHG emissions, impact on the environment. So that's one point that I just want to leave out there. Another one, that the 10 largest rivers, not being in the United States, is a incredible arbitrary cutoff, because the 11th or the 12th or the 13th are just as important. I don't think that that it should be held as any relevance to why we should not care at all about the plastic production and use in the United States. I think that is a very black and white perspective. And the last thing I'll just say is that I really appreciate your stance on paper, and in fact, that is the very nature of the reason that this was pulled, so I expect your full support on the next, because it does actually ban both paper and plastic to hopefully your satisfaction. So that's all, leave it at that.
I've got Rich and then Leslin.
I'm good.
Oh. Didn't you have? Okay. Leslin and then Mike. Lane.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the things that I
love to tell the public is that this legislature does its due diligence in understanding all sides of the issue before we take a stance or vote. So my dear friend across the aisle, Mike, I do want to appreciate what you brought to us and you taking the time to go and talk to Gary at Wegmans. I'm serious about that. Because we have a lot of issues to come our way, and I think we should really have a good understanding of impact and everything else before we make a decision, be informed. So thank you for that. I may not always agree, but I appreciate process, and I appreciate conversation and inclusion. So I want to thank you for that. Happy Women's History Month. It is March. It is Women's History Month, and on March 17th, which is, two Fridays from now, I think, our annual Sister Friends Luncheon in celebration of Women's History Month will be occurring at Emerson Suites Ithaca College. The county is a partner. Martha and I both sit on the planning committee for this luncheon, so anyone who identifies as woman, you are welcome, or you can be a sister friend man on that day. We don't discriminate and say that men cannot attend, but it is a beautiful event where about 375 women and girls of all ages come together to enjoy each other's company, to fellowship, to be reaffirmed about what it means to be a strong woman in our community and in our world. Our guest speaker this year is Dr. Orinthia Montague, president of TC3. So please get your tickets if you have not gotten yours as yet. For 15 years, we've been doing this event. For 15 years, the lunch costs $20. And it didn't go up this year, still $20. And it's a delicious lunch and delicious company. So please get your tickets. They go fast. Only a few left, and you can buy yours at GIAC. 16th. Oh, good Lord, the 16th. I'm selling Girl Scouts cookies on the 17th, you know, all kinds of things. So, yes, and if you will indulge me, you know, I remember Mike singing happy birthday to his mom, and that was so touching. You know, there was a little girl who was born to this legislature named Indira Clearborne, 12 years, almost 12 years ago. On Saturday, she'll be celebrating her 12th birthday. And the men of this legislature at that time gave her her name, because I didn't know what to name the child, so. And had a lovely shower for her. So please, if you see her, tell her happy birthday.
Thank you very much, Leslie. Happy birthday to Indira. Mike Lane, and that's all I see. Anybody else? Dave, okay, Mike.
This rural legislature had the opportunity last night to attend the Downtown Business Association annual meeting in Ithaca to hear about the progress in the central area of our county seat. It was a fine time. It was well attended. We heard several speeches from folks that have businesses downtown, including the woman who has the new pharmacy, and learned about her efforts to work with the opioid addiction crisis downtown. We learned about how construction is continuing downtown. You could, from where we were in the Marriott Hotel, you could look out the windows that had a beautiful view up the hill and see the view being eliminated by the new building that's under construction. But that does show progress in the downtown area. They certainly the engine of economic development is good down there. There's apparently now 540 hotel rooms, I think was the figure that they said. There was discussion about the fact that that when the mall was built in the 1970s, it took away business from downtown Ithaca, but now they're taking business away from from the mall, although I think probably the whole change in retail has more to do with it than anything else. but it was a good thing. What we need to not lose track of is our rural areas. While we are seeing this vitality downtown, which we welcome and are glad to see, but there are six villages, there are nine towns, and they are not coming along as fast as downtown Ithaca. And I just want to point that out. I've said it before. We have to pay attention to them and not exclusively think that everything has to happen in downtown Ithaca.
Thank you, Mike. Dave.
Thank you, Martha. And thank you for passing along the information about the broadband grants that Governor Cuomo announced this week. To a total of $30.8 million, and the towns of Dryden, Newfield, Groton, Danby, and Caroline all have a pretty good piece of that pie. Congratulations to those towns. I hope they can use it wisely.
Thank you very much. That was welcome news. Anybody else? Ann.
I just wanted to say quickly, we met with the soil and the new legislators. We met with the soil and water conservation district manager. And one of the things that I wanted to pass along to everybody is that with the, especially with climate change, and we're seeing a lot more issues with water and snow and flooding, I was pleased to find out that they will come out and give you a free consultation at a residence. They're doing a lot of different things in the whole area as far as drainage, but they will come out and do a free consultation at your residence for drainage.
That's great to know. Thank you, Ann. Anybody else? All right. For a quick report from me, I had the great pleasure of going out on a snowplow last Friday, and I think you're all going to have another opportunity if you'd like. Just contact Jeff Smith, and they plan on, you know, sort of 3 hours or so. I was chauffeured around by Kyle Henderson. It was really an eye-opener. We did a lot of the hills in the eastern part of the county in Caroline and Dryden, and actually a couple little legs into Tioga County and Cortland County, just the way the roads go. And it's an amazing job that they have to do. And he had started at 3:30 in the morning last Friday morning, and I got in the truck at 2:30 in the afternoon, got out at 5:30, and he wasn't about to go home. He was going to go home soon, but that's a very, very long day. So it was, I was tired after 3 hours, and I was just sitting, you know, just the noise and the vibrations, et cetera. He was so many different things that he has to watch and manage, and it was impressive. So I'm serious. You are really welcome to contact Jeff Smith, and he will put you in the truck if you would like to go. So I wanted to mention that since we last met here, three of us went to meet with Senator Tom O'Mara. Deborah Dawson and Jason and I went last week, a week and a half ago, to talk about a number of issues in front of the state that are affecting Tompkins County. And I've emailed all of you. I think that we have a meeting set up with Assemblywoman Barbara Lifton this coming Friday, and Senator Jim Seward the following Friday, and Kathy, I believe, who's still working on setting up something with Senator Pam Helming. So that we can carry our issues directly to our state delegation. And then finally, I would just like to say that I checked with Kathy, and she said the sponsors of the Distinguished Youth Award, Bangs and Cougar Radio Group, et cetera, are very interested in energizing this program again. I think this was a good idea, and we took a pause for a while, but I'd like to invite people to really put this out on your listservs, talk to people that you know, and bring in some more names of young people. Either it can be groups or individuals. I think the only real criterion is that they need to be under 18, younger than 19 years old. And we'll get the specific criteria. Is that the only thing, really? Somebody have to live in Tompkins County?
Correct. I think it's on the website.
On the website. So let's get some more young people in here to, like, inspire us and remind us what we are all about. Deborah, do you have a question?
I just wanted to mention that there was an article in the Ithaca Journal, I think it was today, about a group of about a group of Teaburg High School students who had gone to some sort of science fair thing in New York City, I believe, and they had come up with a really interesting, I'm probably garbling this story, but Ann, you might want to look into it because they would be good potential recipients for that award.
So we can try to do one a month as we used to do in the past, but I'll leave it up to you to sort of bring those forward to the clerks and we'll get you scheduled. Any questions on any of that? So on the delegation meetings, just a lot of you have already let me know that you can make it. Let me know if there's if you're able to join us for any of those two, we hope three, meetings. County Administrator Jason Molino.
Well, I had normally a 35-minute report to give everybody, but I'll spare you today. No, just a brief overview. I've continued to meet with all the department heads for the most part. I think in the next week and a half, I will have met with everyone once. A lot of follow-up with some of them, particularly around their budgets, as we get prepared for the budget retreat at the end of April. They've been incredibly patient and accommodating, as I've asked multiple questions, sometimes multiple times because I haven't quite got it the first time around, so I appreciate all their patience. Some of the emerging issues, this by no means is an inclusive list, but just some things that have popped up that I think will be taking action or at least require some action on our behalf is the Raise the Age preparation as that begins for October 1st. I know Pat has done a great job in probation as well as KID, and we're continuing to learn new things as the state is as we move forward with that. Budget preparation with respect to the budget retreat this at the end of April. Mike Lane and I have met, and we continue to meet as we get ready for that budget retreat to set some parameters for the budget towards the mid-year. Space needs evaluation continues to be on the top of the list. Arel and I are meeting regularly, as well as Dave, to try to come together with some recommendations in the very near future, at least for some immediate needs and then probably more middle to longer-term needs. Also, housing is kicking off and continues to pull us in many directions as we figure out what's the focus area for housing. The airport improvements or airport potential improvements that come with this anticipation of the governor's grant, hopefully sooner than later. And if not, then what to do at that point. And also the Tompkins Center now has some time frames on it that needs action sooner than later. Again, if I left anything out, it's not purposefully. There's an exhaustive list, but that's just some of the things that have come up.
Thank you, Jason. Any questions? Thank you very much. Is that all? I know it's not all. I should have mentioned also that Glenn Morey is on medical leave, and I just wanted constituents to know that he won't be here for a little while, and I want to thank all of you for your best wishes. And if these envelopes didn't get to everybody, see me afterwards. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Jonathan Wood, County Attorney.
So as most of you know, the county purchases all the electricity generated by a hydro plant in Waterloo, New York, and that provides the county with more than half of the electricity that we buy. And I've been promising since we got into this agreement that we would have a time for the legislature to come visit that facility and tour it, and I have a date and so if you can all mark the morning of April 26th, it's in Waterloo. And what exactly it will consist of, I mean, there'll be some sort of reception, I'm sure. But the most important thing is you'll get to see the hydro plant. You'll get to have a tour of the hydro plant. It will obviously be open to the public. And you know, further details will follow, but please, if you can, reserve that time, and we'll figure out a way to get there, et cetera.
Thank you, Jonathan. Very exciting. Looking forward to it. That's a Thursday?
Yeah, it's a Thursday morning, yes.
Okay, great. Any questions for Jonathan? Thank you. Rick Snyder, Finance Director.
Thank you very much. I placed at your place a letter from our auditors at the beginning of the meeting. This is from Incero and Company. I'm not going to read the letter, but they require us to present this to our legislature, each and every one of you, so I've done that. It's simply a kickoff letter or communications letter that tells you what they, our auditors, will do. In the third main paragraph going down, third or fourth paragraph, it expresses what their main duty is to you, the legislator, and that's the purpose of expressing an opinion on our financial statements. That's why we do audits, so that they can give an opinion. Hopefully that opinion will be a good opinion. And most of the rest of the letter is dealing with some of the legal requirements and some of the standards that are set for them. And I just present it to you tonight so that you know that we have officially and formally engaged this audit team and that we have begun the audit. On the second page, the top paragraph speaks to a number of schedules and reports that they do. And the next to last paragraph gives the dates of their field audit. Although we are currently involved in closing the books and doing year-end routines, they will come out and do their field audit starting on approximately April 16th, the week of April 16th. And they will issue the report here to the legislature no later than July 17th. So that three-month period is when we are engaging the field audit with auditors on our site here. And I just thought I would bring this to you because it was easier than any other way of getting it to you. Are there any questions on this? Good. I just wanted to mention, even though I have no sales tax report, we did get January sales tax receipts. They have not been calculated and distributed unto the municipalities yet. And I haven't even looked at how the county's portion has done, but when I look at the main number, the top number, the big number, it's just a little bit better than last January's. So we're up in January, and by the time we get to our next legislative meeting, I should have that full report to you. But it looks like January sales tax just a little bit higher than last year's.
Okay. Good news. Thank you very much, Rick. Any questions for Rick? All right. Thank you. So we've done the consent agenda. Let's go to committee reports. It's only 10 after 8. We'll get started. Dan Klein, Government Operations Chair.
Madam Chair, I do have a little report tonight. We had a really good meeting, some really interesting and relevant things, so I thought I would report on them and give you a little information. The first was we had both our election commissioners here to talk about early voting. So there are competing New York State proposals for early voting. I just want to, you know, make it clear that these have not been enacted yet, so all of this might not come to pass. But we just wanted to get a preview of what it might be like. So one of the proposals would have early voting happening for 8 days before the election, 8 open voting days. Another one would have 12 open voting days. And this would be for all primaries, all general elections, and all special elections. It would not be for village elections, and it would not be for school district elections. So in Tompkins County, that's 2 or 3 in a typical year. In a presidential year, it would be 4 elections, plus if there are any special elections in any given year. So that's a lot of days. You know, if you have 3 elections at 12 days each, that's 36 extra days of voting. Good news of changing. Something that changed from an earlier proposal from a different year is that we would probably only need 1 polling place. And the election commissioners believe that they could probably use the existing office. So that's a real relief, because an earlier version would have had us open a satellite office somewhere and staff it for, you know, several weeks a year. That would have been hard. The cost would be $12,000 to $24,000 per election. And at this point, New York State has said they're going to reimburse counties for the cost of this. We do know how that goes, that, you know, maybe they will, maybe they won't, or maybe they will at the beginning and then phase that out over time, but we'll take what we can get to start with. And we also spend quite a bit of time talking about the logistic difficulties of doing this. Early voting would go up till the Sunday before the election. So then the Board of Elections has Monday to take all that information and all the people that have voted already and make sure that everyone that all the remote polling sites are set up and that in those sites they know who's already voted. So it's a bit of a logistical lift for them, but they're up for it. While we had them, we also asked them about cybersecurity, and I can tell you that the Board of Election Commissioners feel good about cybersecurity as it relates to election data and election systems. They told us that each county is standalone. They're not tied in by the internet to the state. And so that in itself is a really good structure because it just makes it almost impossible to hack in. There's no place to hack in from. Elizabeth Cree said, that's where New York State did it right. And, you know, we do criticize New York State a lot, so I do have to want to credit them when they do something well. And that they've also, New York State has increased funding for cybersecurity. So our commissioners feel good about it. Next topic we did was performance measurement system. To remind you, this is something that the legislature authorized and implemented mid-year. It's outside the budget cycle, so we started last summer, which means we're about maybe 8 months into it or something like that. It's a three-year program that we've authorized. And what we had, who we had is Dave Sanders, who works at Youth Services, and he's our county employee that's heading up this process. And so he described what it means and how it's going so far. So first of all, we've had about a third of the departments volunteer to be involved in it. So that's the first set of departments that's doing it. Over the next few months, we'll bring in another set of departments and then a third set of departments in the next year. And basically what they're doing is setting up systems so that they can track data and set up the data systems to track what it is that they want to be tracking to answer all kinds of questions. And it's different for each department. I don't know if that's explanatory enough of what it means. It is, like I said, still early in the process, so there's really no way to evaluate how it's going yet, but we plan to check back with them later in the year and see what they can tell us. Last thing I want to mention, we had our Jay Franklin from Assessment come and deliver his annual equity maintenance program report. And this is something I talk about every year, and this is a document I highly recommend you reading. You can get it through the Government Operations Committee agenda packet from the last meeting. It's about a 12-page report. And it's a snapshot of what's going on in the county through the lens of assessment. And so, you know, a lot of us are interested in housing issues, and this is one way to look at what's going on with housing in the county. It talks about what municipalities and what categories were reassessed last year, which ones are going to be done this year. So that's always something that your constituents want to know. There were 10,500 changes in assessment, and about 6% of those were decreases. So every year there's 5 or 6% that actually go down. I know it's not the majority, but it can happen if you can challenge your assessment and actually get it lowered. And the last thing that he mentioned that I always find interesting is that Jay has kind of his ear to the on the ground. I don't know if that's the right phrase. He's aware of a lot of development issues, right? So this is what he reported. He's aware of proposals for 5,800 new beds in Tompkins County. Of those, 4,000 of them are in active planning or in construction. 4,000 new beds are in the pipeline right now. And that doesn't include a whole bunch of projects that we know are either going to come or probably going to come in the future. And let me just recite those for you so you get some idea of the scope here. Cornell is probably going to be adding 2,000 beds on campus. There's the whole Cornell East Hill Plaza development that's going to likely include quite a bit of housing. There's a possibility of Maple Avenue Apartments Part 2. There's Chainworks. There's the new Convention Center. And there's City Harbor. So, again, those are all ones he wasn't even counting in the 5,800 beds coming down the pipeline. And the reason that I find this so interesting is because, you know, we talk about a housing crisis in Tompkins County, and I don't dispute that, but I think it's important to not just assume that we're nowhere near generating some of the housing we need. There's a lot coming up. There's literally thousands of beds coming online in the next very few years, and that's going to make a big impact on the housing situation. It may or may not change things substantially, but it's going to make a difference. That is my report. Thank you for letting me go on for a while.
Thanks very much, Dan. Anna?
Just one quick question. Did he outline how many of those beds are affordable housing beds?
He did not.
That might be helpful to note, since I think a lot of these, or all of these, are market rate except for the convention center.
Ann?
I was going to ask that also, and in addition, how many of them are rentals versus for sale?
I don't have those numbers. I'm not sure if he's sorted it out that way. You could certainly ask him.
Thanks very much. You're saying that's in his in this assessment report, or is this just something he verbally he reported on?
That last part is verbally, yeah, the numbers.
Okay. And, Jason, you were
sure.
You wanted to talk about Katie connecting with him, right?
I've asked both Jay and Katie to get together. Both are using similar numbers. A lot of them overlap. What I asked them to do is get together and actually put together a master sheet that can be used interchangeably by both departments to reflect housing development that's in the pipeline, housing development that's coming underway. One of the things that I had, you know, would relay to them also as we meet to kind of develop that is if there can be identified of if there's affordable housing that can be identified, what's the standard. We can add rental and purchase as well to the best that can be identified in advance. Some of it may or may not be, but my message to them was let's have a standard that can be used interchangeably so that you know, one person isn't using one number while another person's using another number. And we'll hopefully develop that over the next month or so. And then you know, that could be an easy way of reporting on it, too. And, you know, if we can see things shift from the planning pipeline into the construction phase, it starts to show some progress. Just a way of measuring success, I think.
Yeah, there's the housing needs assessment, the consultant's report, and one of the main pieces of that report was an interactive spreadsheet, a big spreadsheet that allowed things to be changed, and that then you change a number here, add 4,000 beds, and what happens out the other end. So I would assume that they'll use that.
The other end of it is that, you know, Jay sometimes is privy to information that Katie may not be, because he's sometimes more on the front end of the planning process the development process. So being able to actually link those numbers to potential projects allows both departments to be on the same page, knowing what's in the pipeline, what's coming along. It just allows for some better communication. So you know, hopefully we'll have something next month or so.
Deborah?
I was just going to suggest that one thing we could standardize is whether we're talking about beds or units, because sometimes that's confusing.
Sure.
Right.
Jay specifically uses beds, which is a really a more precise measurement.
Right, but if often that's thought of as student beds, as long as the two of them are really talking apples and apples, that's kind of what we're looking at. So, but that's really important and very helpful. Anything else for Dan? Thanks very much, Dan. Great. Planning, Development, Environmental Quality Committee, Anna Kellis, Chair.
Well, most of the things that have already been talked about were the nature of the PDEC meeting that we had. I did want to reiterate that we did send the plastic bag back. That will be coming up on the agenda on March 26th at 3 o'clock in the chambers. One of the focuses that we want to have this year, and again, this is a reiteration of something that was said earlier this year, the tourism program has been shifted back from budget to PDEC this year, and we'll be able to give it much more time and emphasis. Starting this year, they'll be doing a reevaluation of their infrastructure. Right now they have many different pockets of grants, and they have a strategic plan moving forward, and they're going to be reevaluating both their strategic plan and their infrastructure, and we want to support them as much as possible. And I appreciate, Dan, a lot of the work that you've done on that in the last year and brought certainly to me a lot of attention that I'm wading through slowly and carefully, so thank you. And that's my full report.
Great. Thanks, Anna. Anything else? Any questions? All right. Thank you very much. Workforce diversity. No, I'm sorry. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Mike Lane, Chair.
Our next meeting will be next Tuesday at 4 o'clock in the old jail, and we'll have a full agenda to begin talking about. And as Jason has mentioned, I've been doing some meetings with him regarding where we're going. So we'll be into budget pretty heavy before we know it. And we want to be able to have some clear parameters to look at for our budget retreat in April so that folks can think about which ones they want to ask the county administrator to incorporate into a proposed budget.
Any questions for Mike? Dan.
Mike, do we know if we have finalized the day of the budget retreat, or are we still waiting to hear from some people?
I think we're still waiting. Okay. Jason, do you know?
I thought it was finalized, but I can have Kevin confirm today, or confirm this week. He may have circled back, but I can definitely. I thought it was finalized, but we can send something out just to finalize it.
Okay.
It was April
24th. Yes.
Okay. I will confirm it this week with everyone.
Anything else for Mike? Thanks very much. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslyn McBean, Claiborne Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to start off my report by giving a shout-out, kudos to President Pollock at Cornell University. I picked up the Cornell Daily Sun this week and read that Pollock approves creation of LGBTQ plus program house 25 years after initial proposal. Big ups to her. That is definitely an accomplishment, and I know folks are excited about having a program house open in 2019. So I really do want to give kudos to her. Didn't just let it die because 25 years ago it got vetoed. She brought it. It was brought back up, and it was approved.
What's a program house? I don't know what that is.
I can tell you about it later. You know, we've had, you know, African-American program house. We have Latino Living Center. We can talk about it later. WDIC met on February 28th. We had a pretty full agenda or a good discussion. Others can tell me if I'm lying. We had good conversation about contract language and how are we monitoring, measuring how the folks who contract with us either through the legislature itself or big projects or with their individual departments are mirroring, responding to diversity and inclusion. You know, what are they doing? So, and how do we get that information? So we had a good discussion about that. We are going to look at what we ask for now and when we put out a proposal and see if it's adequate or if we need to do something a little differently. And then we went on to talk about reporting, internal reporting. We've been at this for a while, and so we wondered how do we sort of know, and that's based on our diversity policy, how and what departments are doing to further diversity and inclusion within our county. And so coming up with a reporting mechanism as well as process so that we can get that information. We've lobbed that ball back to the county administrator to talk with department heads. We had a sample reporting form and to see if that will work or if they need to do something different and also just get more information about to whom do they report, because I think it's important that all of us knows what's happening in the county and it's not just happening at WDIC. So we'll wait to hear back from the county administrator after he's had the conversation with department heads. Our LGBTQ plus subcommittee is working on search and seizure and so on around transgender issues. They continue to work. They're going to be going on a tour of the jail, so have a better understanding of the classifications and, you know, how things work in the jail. To get a sense of, you know, can there be separate housing? How do we make these things work? So that's coming up pretty soon. And lastly, I just want to remind folks that the training being done by the Gay Alliance, or LGBTQ+ Alliance of Rochester, is ongoing.
There's still time to register. There's several training dates, several general sessions, there are sessions that are specific to departments. There's still several general sessions, I think, through April. So please, or May, or early May. So please look for the email from Autumn. She did send it out. Please register. I think it is incumbent on us as a legislature, if we're seeing that we value these things and we're seeing that we're providing a safe zone, that we have a good understanding of what it means. So please do sign up and attend the training. And if you don't remember seeing the email, just hit Autumn up again. She'll send it out. And you can register right there. It's a really easy process. So thank you. That's my report.
Thanks very much, Leslyn. Any questions for Leslyn? All right. Thank you very much. For the Housing Committee, we met on February 22nd and began with a review of the housing strategy so that everybody was refreshed and on the same page about what the needs were, but especially what we have already voted on as our priorities of what we should be trying to address as a county, and went on to talk some about some of the tools that are available to us, might be available, and we started talking about goals for the committee, and also talking about one of the goals I have is to really refine the idea for the capital reserve fund, bring something forward so that we can have the legislature weigh in on it, and I hope that we can put it in place this year, try to get some funds moving in that direction. A couple of pieces that are relevant. The staff has been working really hard, Megan McDonald in particular, to really reach out to other communities and find out, get some new models, new ideas of things that are working in other places. We're far from unique on this problem. Including things like we have a Cornell intern working on condominium law in New York State and why is it so difficult for people to build condos. So he's going to dig into that and then report back to us in a couple of months. There's a group working that's going to be meeting about potentially countywide code enforcement. That's another issue we've had on the back burner for a while. We're going to try to move that forward as well. So a number of different things that basically really trying to implement and get moving on the housing strategy. So our next meeting is Monday, March 19th at 3 o'clock. So are there any questions? Thank you. Public Safety Committee, Rich John, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. We'll be meeting tomorrow at 3 o'clock here. And on our agenda, we're going to have a presentation by the Governor's Traffic Safety Committee representative, who was supposed to be here last month when we had our snowstorm. And we have a snowstorm tomorrow. So we'll see. But part of the excitement of public safety, right? I would mention one thing, I don't mean to delay our meeting in any way, but the resolution Leslyn put together about the students at Ithaca High School, there was a very nice letter written by our sheriff in support, and I didn't want the moment to pass without recognizing his sentiments of indicating that it is the role of public safety to stand against any kind of hate speech or hate crime in our community, and we will not tolerate it. So it was great to see his message. I do have a resolution, number J, authorization to accept 2017 Homeland Security Grant and Budget Adjustment, Sheriff's Office, and I would move it.
Seconded by Dave. Is there a discussion? Ready to vote?
I would just note that the money will be used to replace outdated and non-functioning radio equipment. And I've confirmed that's the purpose of the expense, where the money will go.
All right. All in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you.
One other item I hope I had hoped we could get to tomorrow, which is moving the memorandum of understanding between the various parties on LEAD, the Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion Program that we're trying to launch in collaboration with the City of Ithaca and some community groups. Unfortunately, people are still thinking about language, and I'm not sure we're going to get all the way there tomorrow, but I'd like us to go as fast as possible because this was raised, I think, in the Ithaca plan, and, you know, it's been talked about and talked about. I think we're ready to really try to get there. So we'll go along as quick as we can in signing the MOU, which really doesn't bind us to anything other than we're going to work on it. But it's a good program to try to implement, I believe. And until we sign the MOU and go, we can't really find out. So hopefully soon.
Thank you, Rich. Any questions for Rich? Rich, do you happen to know where the jail population is? How are we doing without the variances? What?
I don't have the current numbers, but we should get a good report on that tomorrow.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. Health and Human Services Committee, Shauna Black, Chair.
Our next Health and Human Services meeting will take place Monday, March 12th at 4 p.m. We'll cover the topic of senior housing and care options in the county. Lisa Holmes, Director of Office of Aging with the county, will present on the different types of senior living options and care options. The panel will also include representatives from Longview, Titus Towers Visiting Nurse Service, and possibly one of the nursing homes in our area.
Great. Thank you, Shauna. Any questions? Terrific. Health Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Dave McKenna, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. F&I has not met since our last legislature meeting. We'll be meeting in this facility on the 15th at 3 o'clock.
Okay. Thanks very much, Dave. Mike?
Dave, one of the things that I've kind of missed the last 3 or 4 years out of F&I is a presentation to the full legislature about roads and bridges and projects that we can expect to be seen in our areas. Wondered if your committee had thought anything about asking for that kind of a presentation, or does it make any sense?
Sure, be glad to do it.
Yep. Sounds good. Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you.
So, Mike, that leads to you for the Transportation Committee.
Yes, despite the snowstorm, the Transportation Committee met. It was much worse in Dryden than it was in Ithaca. It was actually pretty good, and we got less snow, as you know, than we expected. But it a lot of transportation has to keep going out there no matter what the weather is, whether it's airplanes or whether it's buses. We had planned to have a presentation on TCAT from Scott Vanderpool and some of the other folks over there, but they had their hands full that morning with some stuck buses and other things. When the weather gets bad, more and more people choose to take the bus, and that's puts a lot more pressure on that. So we'll have them again next meeting. We spent a lot of time with Dwight Mengel, who talked to us about this mobility management idea that we've heard about before, but he wanted to bring forward, as we know, we have the resolution tonight, so that there's the possibility of getting a grant so to be able to devise a business plan. This is pretty forward. There's only a couple communities that are looking at this kind of thing. It's not necessarily something Dwight explained to us that we'd be spending money on as much as putting together a business plan for perhaps a not-for-profit or other organization to do that. We passed the resolution unanimously at the Transportation Committee, but Kathy Covert, of course, reminded us that it needed to go through a standing committee, and in this case Deborah was kind enough to take it forward since she was on both committees, and I want to compliment her on the way she did that. She sent out to all the HHS members a very good description of what was going on so that they could have questions answered and hopefully not have an objection to bringing this forward. So we appreciate the cooperation that they had with our committee as well. And we'll see whether we get it, get the grant. The other thing we did was continued our discussion about Route 13. As you recall, at our last meeting, we had folks from the city of Ithaca in talking about the areas down there. This time we had Jason Leifer, the town supervisor of the town of Dryden, came in, and he talked about different areas of concern and potential development along Route 13. Of concern, of course, is that we don't have driveways on Route 13 all the way from NYSEG to the village line. And so we've actually started talking about what Fernando de Aragon calls access management. Should we have access roads rather than to have all of these driveways? Because the more congested that road gets, particularly where the overlap between Route 366 and 13 exists, the heavier we're going to see traffic and the slower it's going to go. And Supervisor Leifer did tell us about several housing projects that are on the planning board out there in Dryden to move forward. It'll be adding quite a few units and more traffic. That was pretty much our meeting.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions for Mike? Mike, the planning department did a Route 13 study for that, you know, that eastern leg, basically from Barnet to the village some years ago. So, and I know that the question of curb cuts was a big one.
It was, and that study was focused more on nodal development. It really wasn't focused on the, because I was actually off the legislature, but for a while I was on that committee. It was focused on not on the particular problems of traffic as you go along intersections and things like that. So it was useful, but I think what we're looking at is probably a little more nuts and bolts.
So do you mean, for example, Southwest Ithaca, where there are some interior roads and that, like, every store doesn't have a road driveway onto South?
Yes. Or you could even look at NYSEG, where there's a short piece of access road right in front of NYSEG that services NYSEG and also the convenience store there.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much, Mike. I guess there's no unfinished business. Do we have a motion for the minutes of February 20th, 2018, moved by Anna, seconded by Leslin. Any discussion? All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. All right. Can I get a motion to adjourn? Moved by Deborah, seconded by Rich. All in favor? Any opposed? Thank you very much. We're adjourned.